For instance, there was a guy, again, rest in peace, a guy named John Strickland. They called him the franchise, one of the best streetball players in New York. He played on Fat Joe's team every summer. Fat Joe, I assume, was paying him money because that's how it worked. Jay-Z then finally put in a team at Rucker 1 year. He said, I'm going to put a team in one time. That's it, 1 year. Yeah. Win the championship. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to do that one time.
And,
well, I'll tell you in a second, but he wanted John Strickland because he knew John Strickland. And so he said, I'll give you, I guess Fat Joe, he's like, what is he giving you, 20 grand? 25.
Really?
And Strickland went. And I remember a lot of people gave him shit for that, too, and even in the crowd.
They were like, not having loyalty?
Yeah, no loyalty. You turned on Joe for $5,000, you know. So,
yeah, I could see doubling it, but for five extra, for 20% extra, I don't know.
You know?
Team.
So, and Jay, long story short, the championship ended up being Terror Squad versus Jay-Z's team.
Bash your booty like a basketball, you got no butter, don't shake it off.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this not ha- no wait. Wait. Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 228. Today's episode, I have a streetball player. Remember those NYN tours? This guy, Joe Vesey, he's a comic. And he used to play on that shit. He was like around a little bit. He's real young. He did it for a while and all these other like level competitions. Those crazy streetball. Do you know what I'm talking about? The professor. Oh, shit. I was going to download a soundbite of that guy. That guy talking. Fuck. Maybe I'll do that and drop it in. Anyway, so I talked to him about that. Went down to the basketball courts at Stuytown and sat there. Met some old coach. One of those Rucker Park leagues, and then we started the podcast. He interrupts us at some point. But yeah, it was cool. Got some history of the thing. They have these crazy competitions, kind of like White Men Can't Jump. And it just spawned into these like full-on basketball like showmanship games, kind of like motocross, where they I don't know how motocross works. What do? They race for speed, but also like they fucking jump off their bikes while they're doing it. You get points and time. I should know about things before bringing them up. Okay, you guys. By the way, at the end of this episode, another episode of Eats Village. Eats Village number two. I like that name. Eats Village. Doesn't have to be a butt pot every time. But it's always going to be me walking around high. All right, quick. Some dates. Edinburgh. I'm going for the entire month of August. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Every night. Different show. Great lineup looking like it already. We're already starting to come together. I'm not going to tell you much about who's playing, but they're just going to be great. Montreal, same thing. Montreal, the shows are going to be sick. They're already coming together with like real good. Real good shows. I think I'm just going to surprise you. So just get tickets to the shows at Cleopatra. I'm also doing my solo show at 9 o'clock on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday at Cleopatra. That same tranny strip club. So, oh, and then I'm doing one last This Is Not Happening show at the Creek in the Cave, July 28th. On July 28th at the Creek in the Cave at 9 o'clock. The lineup there is really good, too. Sean Patton, the return of Mr. Sean Patton, making his triumphant return to This Is Not Happening for the first time in, like, over a year, maybe. Damn, bro. Bonnie McFarlane's doing it. Someone else I'm forgetting. Someone else also I'm forgetting. Sal Volcano from Impractical Jokers. Rich Voss. And then one more. I'm trying to get a tell to do it. He said he's busy. Maybe he's busy. But I don't know. Who's busy? One day I'll get him to do it. Anyway, you don't write him. Don't write him. And then Edinburgh. So yeah, that's it. That's my shows. Oh. I got LASIK eye surgery. I forgot about that. It's so fucking weird, you guys. It's the weirdest shit in the world. They prop your eyes open like it's Clockwork Orange. I'm all weird about it because I don't even put contacts in. I've never put contacts in. I don't want to touch your eyeball. You're not supposed to touch your eyeball. That's not up for debate. It's not like, oh, it's okay. No, you're definitely not ever supposed to touch it. It's your eyeball. It's got protective covers that immediately snap shut like a Venus flytrap. If heavy winds come by, one grain of dust touches it and you opens and shuts like a fucking wood chipper. No, I've never been able to do that. But I lost my glasses and I didn't feel like getting new glasses, so I went and did it. But they prop your fucking eyes open and they put drops in there to numb it. And they cut a fucking layer. You know, like the top layer where it's just clear, it's like glass. They cut it like when the capillaries are cutting into a... You know, they put the suction cup in, then twist the thing around. It cuts the thing of glass off. And they can reach in and open the door. That's what they do. And they fucking peel it back. And they shoot it right around the black with lasers. With this laser. But it's not like from a machine way far away. It's a handheld thing. And he just keeps popping it. And he's supposed to not stare at it. He's supposed to stare right by it. But there's lasers hitting your fucking eyeball. That's a ridiculous request. Please don't stare at it. What are you talking about? I can see it coming to me. When it gets close enough, like you can't even see it because it's like too close. He's fucking touching it and shit. I'm sure. I'm pretty sure. And then he puts the fucking lensy part back. That's what they don't do in cat burglary shows, and solders it shut. That's how cat burglars are always getting found out. Otherwise, they wouldn't know the jewels are missing, cat burglars. Put the glass back. It's not like they check their jewels every night. You could be gone for months before they discover that they're gone. Solder that glass back. Cat burglars, come on. You can't... You're talking about weeks of lead time. I mean, do it. Anyway. But you know what I mean? It's like, come on. Are there any cat burglars out there? By the way, thanks to all the people who put the Photoshop for the Skeptic Tank episodes. I put it out on Twitter every Sunday or Saturday or whenever I start to work on the episode for the week. And people draw back in with their fucking renditions of whatever the Photoshop is. I don't know if anybody can even see them. They're on the website. I don't think they pop up when people have it on their iPhone. I've tried to make it so it does, but I don't think I know how to even do that. But anyway, the people who do them, they're always fun and creative. Joe Vesey said he saw them, and he was like, oh, those are funny as shit. I'm like, yeah, they are. If you want to find out about Joe Vesey, go on my website. Look at his YouTube link. I have his link for his YouTube for all the sketches he does. He works real hard on them, so take a look at those. I'll put some up there on the site. You can see from Ellis. You can also go to the Callback Podcast. That's his own podcast he has. He's had Chris Rock on there and Aziz Ansari. He gets way bigger guests than me. Damn, brah. And did I tell you about this not happening in Long Island City? I did, right? Yes, I did. 28th at 9 p.m. $20 tickets. But hurry, because it's a super small room. By the way, the Roast of Big J went up. We did the Roast of Big J. It's on legionofskanks.com or Legion of Skanks on their podcast. They have a video podcast. I don't know how to do that. They have a video podcast. It fits for their podcast, Legion of Skanks. And we did a Roast of Big J. It was so much fun. Oh, my God. So you can watch it. I don't know how it turned out, like video-wise, but it's there. Check it out. And thanks, by the way, they've been coming to the This Is Not Happening shows in L.A., the every other week shit. I've heard they've been going really good. I don't host those. But like Diaz hosted one, Tripoli hosted one for my podcast. The other one, my sports podcast, Punch Drunk Sports. But yeah, I've heard they've been really good. The Belly Room in general right now has really some good fucking weirdo shows. They got some legit shows. They have all these $5 shows, and they get, like, real good people. Like, some of them are still, like, the Bringer shows, but some of them are, like, really good. The Walsh Brothers do a show. those This Not Happening shows every other Thursday. Rogan and Yusuf do a like a brand new comedy night. Ding Dong Show on Tuesdays. Kill Tony's on Mondays. Ding Dong Show on Mondays. Excuse me. Oh, Roast Battle on Tuesdays. And then they have like once a month shit. They have just good lineup. It's getting good. They're doing creative shit. The $1 show, that's great. The door guys all come in and they all do their time and they bring up a headliner and it's a dollar. I think the headliner is a surprise. And it was Marin last week. So you pay a dollar and all the door guys get to go up. You support new guys. Fucking good idea. They're thinking outside the box. Taylor has his literary show, Readings or something like that. Readings. David Taylor. Oh, that's Wednesday. That's this Wednesday. This Wednesday in the Belly Room, 8 p.m., Readings. Ren Azizi, Bobby Lee, they're both doing it. It's guys like reading shit that they wrote that are like terrible from like way long ago. Like I would read that screenplay I had for called Shooter. Or like a love letter or some shit. Something. So they're doing that shit. They had a director, BJ Novak, did one of those. Yeah, just cool shows. Cool shows. All Things Comedy, live podcast, sold out. Oh, Burr Madrigal. No wonder it sold out. Anyway, let's start the episode, you guys. Shall we start? I used to be good at basketball. I used to be good at basketball. Between my junior and senior year, I went to Sligo Creek Golf Park. They had a golf course, too. It was the easiest golf course in the world. 64, par 64. And the par 4s were like, you can reach them. Any like good golfer can reach them. They're like 280. One of them is a dog leg. So if you were a good golfer, you have to hit like a 7 iron, 6 or 7 iron, and then a sand wedge in. It was so easy. Still, I don't think I ever broke 100 there. My friend thinks I won't break a 178. He says now that he says I will break 178, but he said I will break 200, but I won't break 178 at St. Andrews. We'll see. Anyway, but I went to Sligo basketball court. I go every day after work or after whatever I was doing, just all the time. Maybe I didn't even work. No, that's when I worked for Domino's. That's when I worked Domino's or the flower shop, one of them shits. So I had weird hours so I could just go play all day. And I would. And I got good. I got pretty good. I came back. My coach saw me just hitting threes. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're going to want to take those in a game. And I'm like, yeah, motherfucker, I'm going to want to take them because I can hit them now. I could tell. Everyone's like, damn, Mario, you got better. They call me Turtle. That's right. They call me Turtle because I was so slow. I was slow, but I was long. I could block shots, and I was smart with passing. When I blocked shots, they'd always call it. They'd call fouls, even when it was when it went out of bounds. When I blocked it out of bounds, they would call a foul automatically. I was like, you know, that's not a foul. I blocked that so clean, but they're like, whatever. We get the ball back either way. Let me live with this dignity. I was so Jewy and white. It was before I got glasses. People are like, can you see? I'm like, yeah, I can see. They're like, is it amazing? I'm like, no. It looks like right before, because I wear glasses all the time. It looks like I have my glasses on. I had corrective lenses that fit a centimeter away from my eyeball called glasses, and I could see like I do now. But really, it's like 2020. It's like a different world. I don't know if it'll stay this way or what, but it's fucking crazy. Oh, yeah, and I played, and I got fucking good. I got really good, and that was it. And then I got way worse. I could dunk a little bit when I was in Israel, when I was in Yeshiva. I got those from the back of Sport Magazine. I got those waffle shoes, you know, where you stand up on waffles. It was like $69, something like that. And they give you this training program. No, I did not get the waffle shoes. Those were $69. I got the training program for like $12, and it just gave me these exercises, and I did them. Like these, you had to run fast 10 yards, like sprint as hard as you could, walk 10 yards, sprint as fast as you could 20 yards, walk 10 yards, sprint as fast as you could 40 yards, walk 10 yards, then sprint back 90 or 100 yards, whatever's left over. And it got so hard. These jumps, you had to jump up and then lift your knees up in the air. And I could dunk. I did it. And then downhill from there. That was my height. High school in Israel. And then I was gone after that. We won the basketball league for Yeshiva, for all the other Jews. We won it. We played for some pizza shop. Chaim Zakheim would feed me a drop step. By the way, after this interview, we went and played. Gary Goldman, Sam Morrill, Kenny. Just some two-on-twos. It was fun as shit. I love basketball. I'm so bad now, though. I'm better than Nick Youssef. I mean, I had a blister for that, but I'm bad. All right, let's start the episode. Ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so this is my main thing about all this streetball shit, that they fucking travel all the time. They're not, like, not traveling. They're not playing by the rules. Even Harlem Globetrotters, like, that's an illegal play. This is an NBA jam. This is an NBA jam. You can't throw the ball up and then catch it and throw it up again. Like, that's a double dribble. That's a travel. You took a bunch of steps. That's a travel. I know it made me look foolish, but you travel to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 228. That's clearly a travel. With Joe Vesey, starting now. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl with a gun, I would call her. I wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl with a gun, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat. 6'4" baller. I wish I was a little bit taller. Yeah, to say, to say I'm happy with us.
Just to stand up for yourself and be like, no, that's not right. That's a piece of shit thing to do.
Yeah.
Not just because, like, oh, we should be
I like the one
by society rules.
Where his wife invites the dentist over for dinner. And he goes, what? That's my dentist. And she's like, yeah, I mean, now he's come over. She's like, oh, now every time I see him, I got to talk about. Then he's like walking the steps and he's like hits him. He's like, well, I got to find a new dentist
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so that's great. He's like, all right, I can already see it. He's like, all right. No, it's so good. No, majority of the time, I would say like 90% of on that show, I think Larry David is correct.
Really?
I think so, 90%.
It's just that one move where it's like, just give in, man. I know you said it, but now it's like, now you have 30 people against you. Yeah. You really want to stand for it this hard?
Yeah, absolutely. Love that show.
God, I do too.
Such a great show.
Yeah, when
so
you see
brilliant.
That show, everybody's like, oh, Seinfeld had nothing to do with Seinfeld. Like, the reason Seinfeld was good was because of Larry David.
Yeah, I mean, I like Kerr better than Seinfeld, too.
Yeah.
I never
more,
really
it's
got
more based
Seinfeld.
On, like, sort of real. Right? Or maybe not.
Well, it's just more raw.
Yeah. Because
you can
yeah.
get away with more. I think they figured out ways to say things that they couldn't say on TV on Seinfeld, and then in Curb, he's blatantly just saying
what
it.
What is Curb? HBO?
HBO, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can get away with anything there.
Yeah. You didn't know it was HBO?
I think I did, but I never watched it on TV.
Oh, that's really interesting. Just you thought, like, Curb shit. All this time was, like, on NBC or something.
I didn't think that. I thought it could have been Showtime or Netflix. I guess not Netflix.
No. Yeah, I guess HBO. Yeah, there's, I mean, honestly, the first six seasons of Curb I don't even know there's a bad episode. The first six are just incredible.
And then what happens to it?
I thought the seventh, honestly, the Seinfeld reunion show, I thought that was a little up and down that season. I mean, they were still fun as hell.
Is that him trying to save Michael Richards?
You know what? Those ones, the specific ones with Michael Richards were great, though. That was so funny.
I heard
where,
with J.B. Smoove just staring at him.
How great was that? I mean, they're so... Yeah, I mean, that was a cool season. I just didn't love it. The eighth season I liked better, the one where he's in New York.
That was it the first season where he just it comes full circle and he's outside trying to get this development deal and he's outside saying, I steal, and all the network executives
see him. I want to say that's the third.
That's the third. That was good because it came around the whole season.
The way he connected shit in that first six seasons where I'm like, this is too good.
Yeah, he would call stuff back like four episodes later.
And the way he'd interweave like five different little things throughout the episode, I mean,
yeah,
it was unbelievable.
He write all that?
Writing. Yeah, he wrote all the outlines, and then by season five, though, he brought in some guys from Seinfeld to help him, I think, a little bit
oh, really?
On set and stuff like that. But ultimately,
it was all mumblecore shit, though, right? There was no like actual dialogue or what?
No, all detailed outlines.
Yeah. And then they just riffed.
Yeah, and they riffed.
Garland made out like a bandit in that thing.
He did. But he helped come up with the idea of Curb, so he deserves it.
Yeah, that special was one of the coolest specials.
That was a good one.
Being different. Joey Diaz has me once a long time ago. Nobody wants a special anymore. It's just you standing up in front of a fucking wall. It's like it's been done 1,000 times.
Yeah, this was different.
Oh, yeah. The making of his special that he didn't end up making.
I was an extra on Curb when he was in New York. And it was so much fun to just see him in person do the 6-7 different takes. And he was just so good at switching it up. And I was just blown away.
Wow.
I was supposed to face forward, but my eyes kept, like, I was just darting to watch him. I was like, I can't believe it.
I love watching extras.
Oh, the show with Gervais?
No, I mean just extras in
films. Oh, watching extras in shows?
Yeah, I watch them not do what they're supposed to or, like, overly act.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. I guess if you could see me, I wasn't doing the best job. I think I multitask pretty well.
The funny thing is they're not allowed to do lines. So instead of going, like, wow, that's really cool, they have to, like, show that with their faces, so they go way overboard.
Right. Because then they'd have to pay them if they said a line.
Right, yeah. So they just go like, with their finds like, oh, like they're giving like an, oh my God, with their face.
Or have you ever seen when an actor has to go up to an extra and they're not supposed to say anything? It's weird too, because then they're like, it's like they're...
They mime out like, they don't do their mouth.
It's like if a word comes out, the production's like, fuck, gotta pay a grand now.
I remember I did a commercial once and there was extras and we were at like a party, just like a house party. And I was like, all right, well, they can't be on camera. They're like, oh, they got to turn around. They can't be on camera. So then they turned around, and I was talking to them. Like, oh, you can't even talk to them. Like, what do you mean? If they're not talking to me, like, can't even talk to them.
Like, so that costs money, extra money
if
you talk to them?
So I just stand there staring at them, mouthing out, sorry.
It's so weird. Extras get treated so badly on
sets,
too. So
badly.
And I really don't, that's the thing. We were just talking about when to say things, when not.
Yeah.
I don't like that hierarchy. Like, I get there has to be a hierarchy on a film set, but you don't have to be so shitty about it.
So clear about it. Like, no, the they call them talent instead of actors. Like, the talent eats first. You're like, why? Everybody's working hard. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's like
the lighting guys are working way harder than the fucking actors who are but craft food all day.
Yeah, no, I know. It's so shitty. It's very shitty. I hope in one day when I'm making movies, I want to really say that on set. I'm like, no, we're gonna have like the production assistants are gonna be, everyone's gonna be treated really well. Like, you know, I'm gonna change the hierarchy on my set. Not where they're giving me notes, but where at least we're not being dicks about it, you know? And you know what? A lot of those production assistants that are there are kids in film school. They wanna see stuff. So, you know, rotate them. Let them be around where they can observe. They're getting paid shitty. They're not in the union. Let them observe stuff. Let them be more closer to the set, you know?
Oh, right.
Because at least
what they're doing there.
You know, at least the lighting guys, that's like their career. They're getting paid overtime. They're in the union. They're getting
compensated.
They're
working at what they're doing. Exactly. Yeah, the interns and stuff. You're right. Because all they want to see stuff. They got paid shit.
Well, because when I've been on
set, you want to make them go fucking drive around, and that's your internship. It's like,
yeah, it's not learning anything.
From the airport, you don't learn shit that way.
Not at all. So I would change that hierarchy a little bit. All
right, we'll consider it changed. I got kicked out once. I was in an extra. I was an extra, and then they're like, no, you can't eat. This is only for the actors. I'm like, no, I'm acting. It was like early on in LA. I'm like, I'm acting. I'm one of the guys in the crowd. And like, no.
Yeah, that's
like,
not acting.
I don't know, man.
It's shitty. It's absolutely shitty. It's not nice.
I escaped to go do an open mic.
Was that your first one?
Yeah, jumped Jimmy Smith's boxing movie. And first one was exciting because you get to see some boxing. And they put us all on like one side of the, so they can get the camera angle that way. But then they're like, cool, now everybody move to the other corner. We'll shoot it from a different angle. But it was choreographed, so it was the exact same fight. So it was real hard to like cheer for the fight that you know exactly how it's going to end.
Well, that's where the acting skills came into play for the extra. So that guy was wrong. You were acting.
Yeah. I had an open mic at the Comedy Store. I had to draw a number, so I was like...
Was that your first one, you said?
Yeah. Only time I was an extra.
The Comedy Store, that seems like a tough place to do your first open mic. I don't know why I say that.
It's
I've
a hard
never done
room.
An open mic, but
it's a hard, hard room.
Yeah.
Especially when there's not many people there. Open mics there was like 10, 12 people.
Yeah.
But at least it was real people. Did you do open mics here?
I did. My first open mic was New York Comedy Club.
Was it humans or just comics?
It was just comics, but it was a very supportive open mic. Had I probably not tried ever again, and somehow I got some laughs on some horrible jokes, and
So all the comics were watching.
I was hooked. All the comics were watching. But it was a nice mic. It was a nice group of people.
That's how most of the mics are in LA, where it's just other comics, but they're all like, we'll stay.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, well, they probably, maybe they're trying to avoid traffic.
It's because there weren't like three things you could go to, so no one was just coming, doing the spot, and leaving.
Yeah.
It was like really everything was at 8, so like occasionally you could do 2.
I mean, the fact that I'm even doing stand-up comedy still blows my mind. Like, it's just I never thought I'd be doing it, so it's pretty like...
At what point did you never think you'd be doing it?
Ever. Never. Right. When I used to watch it on TV, and I was a big fan of Def Comedy Jam, I loved it. I was like, wow, I could never like even fathom someone doing it.
You like Def Comedy Jam?
Loved it back in the day, the
early
ones.
How much black culture did you grow up in?
A lot.
Yeah?
A lot. Everything I think I did was black.
Why?
Not on purpose. I think I just, that's what I liked.
Got into?
Yeah, it wasn't like anything, like, you know, I grew up thinking, you know, my celebrity crushes were Tyra Banks and Vivica Fox, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I used to jerk off to Vivica Fox's sex scenes in Booty Call with Jamie Foxx.
She was too tough for me, Vivica Fox.
I like that.
And who's the other one? Angela Bassett. She's tough as shit.
Yeah, I used to. Yeah, I like that too.
She's big.
And I kind of went on to date alpha black females. I think watching Little Kim when I was in the fifth grade had a big effect on me. My mother loved hip hop, and
really?
That's the shit I was watching. As
your mom's white?
My mom's white. She loves hip hop.
The Little Kim thing though, she's an alpha woman.
Absolutely.
She's just, but she's so sexual and like womanly.
Yes, but she's also very, like, I mean, you've listened to some of her records.
Yeah.
She's pretty, I would call that alpha still.
Why, what kind of stuff does she have?
Well, I mean, just any, I think any girl who's like, I'll suck your dick and that's the best pussy you've ever had, it's that's pretty alpha.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's very, very sexual. I think I've always been geared towards girls who are a little bit more open sexually and more, you know, outspoken.
Oh, really? What would you like
it?
About that?
What'd you say?
What would you possibly like about that?
Yeah. I mean, I just very, yeah, I think that's like the type of girl I've always kind of dated. I've never really been able to, like, date the shy girl.
Yeah. Yeah, shy girls are tough. Yeah, I go back and forth and girls boss me around. I guess that's been a while, actually.
Are you now, single right now?
I'm ever single.
You're never single?
Ever. Like, you're evergreen.
Wait, what do you mean?
I'm always single.
Oh, you're always single.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. It's just like, I mean, I don't even think about.
Well, how long has it been since your last relationship?
I don't know. 4 years, maybe.
Okay. Not bad. Not bad.
3-4 years.
Well, by the way, we're at the Stuytown basketball courts. If anyone wants to, I don't
Stuytown
know, can they hear the ambient sound?
They might be able to hear some ball bouncing if there's a fight. What do you think about this new trend of Asians who can really play? I mean, that kid in the red wasn't, but the kid with the tank top down there, he has a really good shot.
You know what? That's actually not, unless there's becoming more of them, I wouldn't say it's a new trend because there was always, growing up, there was always one or two Asian guys that were pretty good at basketball.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was an Asian kid at my school that was pretty good, but I always liked putting him in his place, I'll be honest.
Right.
I guess that was kind of race where I was like, all right, take it easy. You're
not supposed to racially be better than me.
You're not, you're like, I can't let the Asian guy be better than me. Kind of always had to go a little bit harder.
I used to go play at like Sligo Creek basketball court, like when I was in high school. Like so in between, I think, junior and senior year, I just played like 5 times a week.
Where is that?
It's like in Maryland.
Okay.
But I came back. And the coach was like, Jesus, when did you learn how to play? It's amazing how just a little practice goes. But, like, if I blocked any of their shots, it would be pretty much an automatic foul because I was, like, the only white guy down there.
Oh, okay.
And they would just, like, wouldn't accept it, especially with the guy with the glasses.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, the croakies in the back.
And you're pretty tall. What are you, 6'2",
6'3"? 6'3".
Yeah.
And I have long arms. But
well,
anyway, it's like, they're like, no, foul, no way. I'm like, that was completely clean. Okay, it went out of bounds, so fine, you're getting the ball anyway. But,
yeah.
Like, that's completely clean. You know it.
That's funny. I used to play in L.A. with a group of all Asian basketball guys.
Really?
Yeah, in the Valley. There was a run that someone put me on to all Asian actors.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty good run. I was the only white guy.
Really?
All Asian dudes and all actors. One of them was on Larry David's show. He played one of the an episode where Larry kept apologizing for something. It was in a Chinese restaurant. I forget what it was. What it was, but he was one of the. I remember seeing him at this run. I wish I could remember the episode.
Oh,
but
cool. I usually see the Asians like more like that guy in red with a Chris Paul shirt, rather than this guy in the tank top who's like a little bigger. They usually seem super small and scrawny, and they can dribble
real fast.
Definitely
good Asian guys, though. I've seen some really good Asian ball players. I've definitely seen some really good ones.
Do you ever see black ball players who are? Damn! I watch this guy miss an open three. Oh,
now,
wow.
The runs out here used to be really good.
Really?
Yeah, they used to be really good. But I feel like basketball pickup ball has declined everywhere, like, in the past, like, 5 or 6 years.
Why?
I don't really know. I think just less people are playing. I think there's video games and iPhones and stuff like that took over. Because when I was growing up, like, you know, I played a lot of different places. And from here to Long Island,
yeah,
there was always just gyms full, and it was runs. I mean, it was just, like, everywhere. I just remember being blown away by that. I mean,
it is because of, like, smartphones and shit? People are like, I'm already doing something, I'm connected. Instead of being like, I'm bored, I should go meet somebody for basketball.
I think it started before smartphones. I think kids of the generation just got lazier, more kids drinking, smoking, and it's just like, even the guys who would play ball back in the day who smoked and drank would at least wait to do it after.
Oh,
now
really?
Now it's like this is a part of their whole day.
I saw guys with 40s at the court.
Yeah, now the guys are too lazy. They're with the 40 at home.
Right.
They're not coming out.
Yeah.
They're not coming out. At least those guys came there and they showed up and they're like, we're going to play drunk at least.
Yeah, when they like lost, when you have to like sit a game, they would get there next and then they would just start drinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now I don't know, it's declined. I mean, like I said, in Long Island where I even moved for a couple years,
yeah,
the runs were insane. I mean, it was unbelievable. I'm talking about in the middle of nowhere. Like,
really?
Each gym was like packed with
you
good
play inside.
Guys.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Winter, I guess.
It's great. Great runs. Those runs, non-existent anymore.
So when did you start playing?
Probably like 5, 6 years old.
Okay.
Maybe even younger.
Yeah, and they're just always playing?
High school, middle school, a little bit in college. But yeah, I played every single day. And the amount of hours, I thought about this the other day when I knew we were going to do the podcast. The amount of hours that I have played basketball, if there was some way to tally it up, it must be unbelievable.
Like a year? You think you played a full year of basketball?
Easily. Has to be. I mean, there were times I would play literally from 10 a.m. to 8 o'clock at night.
Oh,
easily.
Wow.
Easily.
That's about as long as I studied when I was in yeshiva.
Yeah, it was about
What a hugely amount of wasted time. I mean, not wasted. I guess it's fun and exercise.
Well, I mean, basketball has gotten me a lot of places. I've made money off of basketball. I've been able to... Networking. It's
How'd you
got
make
me
money off it?
Street ball. Street okay. basketball I would play, and I started making money off that like late high school, early college.
How do they find you for that?
How
did you find them?
No, I kind of found them because I'm trying to think of when the first thing that I did.
Yeah, like how do you get into it?
Yeah, it's almost like comedy. It's like a weird thing. I'm trying to think what the first thing I did was... I guess the first thing I did was when N1 was coming to town for the first time in the arenas.
They're playing in arenas?
That was the first year of arenas. I was a big fan of it.
They started outdoors, right?
Started outdoors.
And then it got bigger?
Then it got bigger, and then it went to arenas. And the first year they came to the Garden...
The N1 tour came to the Garden?
Yeah. Wow. I had already played in the EBC, which was Rucker Park.
What is the EBC?
That's the Entertainers Basketball Classic Rucker Park.
What does that mean? That's out of bounds.
That's what it stands for. Entertainers.
What does that mean, entertainers?
That's what the league was called, the Entertainers Basketball
Classic.
But they're
not entertainers. They're just entertaining with basketball?
Well, the tournament, I guess, became so entertaining, that's what they called it.
Oh, right.
NBA
players were
showing up. Big street ball players
really?
Were showing up. Yeah.
Just to play in this game?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
How high level of game was it?
Very high.
I mean, if NBA players were coming.
I mean, one game, there was one. This was one game, one night.
Yeah.
Jermaine O'Neal, Sean Marion. Who else was there? Jermaine O'Neal, Sean Marion, Stephon Marbury. And there was more than that. I'm forgetting some.
Stephon Marbury was a god here, right?
Especially in Coney Island, yeah.
I mean, in New York. That's where he was, Coney Island?
Yeah, Coney Island.
He's the one I realized where it's like New York has this huge like egocentricity where they're like anyone who comes out of here is like revered way beyond the same level of person who comes out of like Alabama.
Because the competition's so much harder here. So if you can stick out here, you can stick out anywhere.
Yeah, but it seems like guys like Bernard King and like Marbury are still talked about almost like one of the best. But it's like, yeah, one of the best. You didn't prove it in the NBA against the best.
Yeah, I don't know. Do people really still talk about Marbury?
No, I feel like they've just stopped talking about him after China.
I mean, I kind of got over Marbury years ago. But, yeah, I mean, he was cool. I mean, I still talk about the guys like Skip to My Lou.
Those guys.
Because I remember watching him as a little kid at Rucker. And
yeah.
It was unbelievable.
What was he like?
Just doing anything he wants on the court.
Really?
And those guys can really, you know, it's the highest competition in New York, and he was just making these guys look so stupid.
Look foolish.
Skipping on the court, dancing.
Really?
Yeah. And this was...
That's how he got his nickname?
Real games. Yeah, that was how he got it. He was doing that stuff when he was like 14. I mean, that was the first N1 mixtape, Volume 1. It was a compilation of
his
highlights.
Was he white
or black?
Black. Black.
Yeah, Ray
how
for
tall
Alston.
Was he? Ray for 6'3"? Alston?
6'3"? Yeah, Ray for Alston, about 6'3".
And then how come a guy like that never goes to, like, college or...
He did. NBA? He went to Fresno State.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And he just, did the game translate?
Yeah, he did well. He got into some trouble off the court, and he got drafted late in the second round by the Bucks. And then he had a struggling career, and that eventually kind of made it pretty big in the NBA. He got a $30 million contract.
Did he really?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Rafer Alston.
Rafer Alston. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I remember him. That's Skip to My Lou?
Yeah, Skip to My Lou.
Oh.
He was a little bit of a, you know, guy off the court who had some issues.
Like what? Drugs?
No, violence? Not drugs. Well, here, I want to give you an example.
Yeah, sure.
Hunter College Pro-Am. It's one of the most popular tournaments in New York as well.
Yeah.
It's probably Rucker Park, and then it was Hunter College at the time. Those were the biggest tournaments. And it was packed. I went there. I was in high school. My father went, and we were sitting in the first row.
Yeah.
And people saw my father there. People don't know, I have to say, for this story. He was a writer for the Post and
Washington
analyst.
Post?
No, New York Post.
Oh, yeah.
And worked.
Probably the most important sports newspaper.
Yeah, he worked for basketball. People knew him. And Rafer knew he was there that night. We knew Rafer. Rafer was always nice to me. I've seen him up at Rucker. And about first quarter into the game, he was playing really well.
Yeah.
Something happened.
What do you
mean? A call happened, like he had a bad call. He was arguing with the ref. And then he kicked the ref in the ass with his foot. Literally kicked him in the ass.
To hurt him or just to, like...
I mean, I don't think I'm sure he could have... No, he just kind of kicked him, like, you know, to let him know. But okay.
It wasn't, touch his foot.
He touched him, yeah. He definitely kicked him. Yeah, he really, kicked him in the ass.
Okay.
Of course, they threw him out.
Yeah.
This is a pro-am, which means, you know, these are, like, you know, referees that are in training for, like, NBA. Like, this is...
And those guys always try to keep, like, order more than anybody at, like, a higher level.
But the point of the story is Rafer was playing good. It's a pro-am. In the summertime, you know, you have a writer sitting in the front row, and he kicked this dude in the ass. He's on the fringe on the NBA. My father didn't print that solely because he was so nice to me as a kid.
Really?
Had he printed stuff like that, you know, stuff like that could make or break you when you're a fringe player.
Yeah, that
hurts.
People don't want to. I don't know if I want to draft this guy.
Well, yeah, he was already in the league, but I don't know if I want to sign him. I don't want to re-sign him. He was, you know, on the fringe. And
it's so weird. Instead of like, okay, you're showcasing, really.
Yeah.
And, like, now's your opportunity to let... I mean, I get getting worked up over, like, a bad call because you're showcasing, but then it's like...
Yeah, it's not a good idea. It's like trying to showcase at a club, and then you get so mad at the crowd, you start shitting on the club and start
getting
and then all of a sudden, okay, well...
You're like, well, you're showcasing.
Yeah, it's not a good idea.
You motherfuckers!
Yeah.
I heard somebody showcase for Mitzi. I heard it was Willie Barsena, but I don't know. But she wasn't, like, she was talking to someone in the back, and he saw her. He's like, you motherfucker, fucking look at me when I'm in. And I was like, well, it's over now, man. I mean, she was
that's great.
Probably talking for a second, but
that's great. I've always had fantasies of just doing stupid shit, like, oh, my first audition at the Cellar, I just do crowd work.
Oh,
just like things, like, oh, you wish these
like,
are things
I'll
you could do.
I'll show everybody. Yeah.
I want to do crowd work.
Yeah.
All new material.
I did crowd work at the Laugh Factory, and Jay Masada was like, but there was like six people there. And he's like, what's that?
And that was your audition?
Yeah. I was like, I don't know, man. I'm showcasing to be in the club. He's like, yeah, but you can't do that on the Tonight Show. I'm like, I'm not showcasing for the Tonight Show. I'm showcasing for your club with six people in it. I'm not doing material in front of six people.
Yeah. But what did he say? Did he respect it?
No.
No.
He was just like, well, it's okay, but you're not passed.
Do you work I assume you work the Laugh Factory now.
Yeah. Like, 8-9 years later.
8-9 years
I got
later,
in there only because I was doing other stuff in my career.
Yeah.
That club I did not get into on my own merit. No, here or there, there was like a decent booker who like liked me, but then he ran through booker so much that they'd be out. And I'm like, fuck, now I'm out too.
Right.
Like when Joe Harary leaves Stand Up New York and all these people are like, nah, I just got in.
It's very tough like that. Yeah, it's really like, yeah, the way clubs change and bookers change. If you're not like in or you don't have a bunch of TV credits, when that booker changes, that's a big moment for you.
Yeah. Right. If you can't outlast that,
you can't,
that
like,
change.
Outlast, yeah. So that's why, yeah, TV credits are very important.
They respect them a lot more in New York. Even the ones that don't add to draw, they just feel like it's a validation. Like, oh, he was on some Maxim show. And you're like, what? That's not a network. But, like, everyone's like, oh, we've got to let him in.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I get it. I mean, it's a business, so I understand. It's like anything else.
But it doesn't help your business.
Right.
Well,
I guess depending on who it is.
An Amazon show, those don't help your business.
No, not like that.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm saying like someone like who you've seen on Guy Code a bunch of times, or, you know, that could help a little bit.
Yeah.
More than me who's not on Guy Code.
Right.
That's all.
What really helps is putting on a fucking great show every night. And
that's
then people
true.
Just be like, well, that place is awesome.
That's true.
Because most people don't recognize any of the people anyway. You reckon, if the, even if five people have real credits, you only recognize one of them.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, back to this.
Yeah.
So then you were playing with him, and did he help you get in? Skip my Lou?
No, he was just always nice to me as a kid. Like I said, I was a fan of the N1 mixtape. I was a little kid, so I'd seen him play at Rucker. I'd seen him in the Boston Summer League. I used to go down to the Boston Summer League. I was a ball boy. Boston Summer League
in Boston, Massachusetts?
Yes. It was a summer league that was the main summer league for the NBA. So all overseas guys and guys trying to make it would play. I was a ball boy for the teams down there. And Rafer was down there for a couple years because he was trying to make it on a team. And, I'd be shooting around with him, or I'd be guarding him. He'd be messing around with me. I was a little kid. So he was always, really nice to me because he liked me. I remember him complimenting me on my crossover when I was a little kid.
Really?
Yeah. I had a pretty good handle starting because I was so into that stuff. I'd bring a ball with me. Everywhere I went.
Would you sleep with a basketball?
No, I wasn't stupid. I always hate when people say that. Yo, I used to sleep with a ball. That didn't help you.
My coach did that. So you always...
that's so dumb.
Carry it around school with you on game days.
I would, in Long Island, I brought it to me before school, and I would dribble before class, dribble in between class.
Really?
All the time. Ball was with me.
You shut the fuck up?
Some teachers, I remember them actually being pretty cool about it. They would have to tell me to stop, get in class, but I would be doing, tricks and dribbling all the time.
Really?
I mean, yeah, it was my life. The way comedy is, my life now, basketball was everything.
What? Okay, so then how do you get in? Like, how do they recruit you?
So long story short, I knew Escalade, who was a streetball player, rest in peace. He's also Mark Jackson's brother. He was playing for the N1 team at the time, and I knew Escalade, and he got me on this thing called the Battle of the Boroughs, which was a game of Queens, Brooklyn, Bronx, all playing each other in the Garden before the big game.
Wow.
So I played on his Queens team that he was coaching, because he's from Queens, and Escalade had me on a team. I was in ninth grade, and I was with a bunch of other adults that were from Queens, like streetball guys. And the first game, I think, was Queens against Brooklyn or something like that. And this was at the Garden, pre the big game. So it was at 6 p.m.
So some people were there.
Some people are there, not packed.
Yeah,
and
prelims.
Yeah, and I played pretty good. I remember hitting my first couple threes, which was pretty big at the Garden.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
and
damn.
I was playing against all adults.
Hit three-pointers in the Garden.
Yeah, I was the only adult. I was the only kid.
Really?
On the court. Yeah, absolutely. I remember I did this little trick with the ball. I did a little fancy move, and then I hit the three. That was that was pretty big.
That's cool.
And against some, dude in braids that didn't even think I would have the guts to probably even pull
because
up.
Because you're a little white kid?
Yeah, I'm like, a little white kid? Who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And then...
He's laying off you, and then you're like...
Yeah, completely laid off me. And then I played that
That's
game.
That's ridiculous, because anyone who's on that court has got to be really good. It's not just some guy who called next, an hour and a half ago.
Well, and
he's finally in.
But you know what there is? There's always going to be that thing with white guys.
No respect.
Yeah, black dudes are not going to respect a white guy. Do they really give them a reason? Doesn't matter what they.
I remember who was the guy that played for Georgia Tech. Oh no, it wasn't Georgia Tech. It was UNC. It was Jeff McGinnis, I think.
Oh, okay.
And he was playing against. This might not be Jeff McGinnis, but I think it was. It might have been that guy in Georgia Tech, that point guard. He missed four straight foul shots in the NBA against Orlando. In the finals that one year.
I don't know that. I'm bad with college basketball.
Yeah, he was an NBA. He was a New York playground guy.
Okay.
Fuck, I forget his name. Anyway.
So then I play in this game, and I remember Rafer wasn't going to play in the game, because the main game, because he was going to get fined by the NBA for playing.
Really?
Yeah.
They wouldn't let them play in those N1?
They started not let him, because he was starting to get more known, and then it became like, all right, we're going to kind of fine you if you're playing in an unsanctioned game.
Was he an all-star at some point? Rafer Alston?
I don't think he was ever an all-star.
He was a name that I remember.
Yeah, absolutely. He did well on some of the teams he was on. So he gave me his uniform to play in, which I still have to this day.
It says Skip to My Lou on the back?
Yeah, it says Skip to My Lou. I got the shorts. I got the jersey.
Wow.
And I played on the actual N1 team, not against them. I played on the actual team. I played 30 seconds the whole game because I ended up, I don't know how I got out of it, but I was too scared to play. It was the gym, the arena filled with 10,000 people.
That day or later?
Yeah, that day. Yeah, later.
They said called you up, hey, you want to play again?
No, it was 6 p.m. I played the Battle of the Boroughs game. Then 8 o'clock, the big game came. Rafer said, Do you want to play? Yeah, do you want to play on the N1 team? I'm not going to play, you know. And then he just was like, here's my uniform. Wow. I didn't know any of the guys on the team. And then I remember Escalade saying, yo, we're going to let you go in and play against the professor, because the professor was on the opposing team.
The professor!
And I was like, I don't know how I got out of it, but I did. I didn't want to. I was scared.
What do you mean? You backed off?
Yeah, I was nervous.
Wow, pussy.
Yeah, yeah. I was
your
in ninth
chance
grade.
To go with the professor?
Yeah, I was really, because I already, it was 10,000 people in there. I was just, I hadn't played the whole first half. They forgot to put me in at all. So I think I was ready, kind of, I just remember feeling like stiff. I hadn't played the whole first half, and I was just like, I don't want to do this.
Was there?
I was scared. Yeah. I was scared. I remember.
Did that stuff become all about Showtime, or was there any, like,
some games would get serious.
Okay.
Because the whole point of N1 was to win and entertain. So
Right. They
wanted to win the game. They didn't want to lose.
Is it kind of like motocross where you're trying to like go fast, but also you want to do tricks and shit in the air while you're like...
Yeah, I mean, all those guys, N1 started with real ball players that just were flashy. So they wanted to win. They didn't want to just be about tricks. That's, you know...
And who did they play against? Other N1... Was it an N1 league?
It was like basically in the beginning,
Yeah. They
would travel to cities and play against the best guys from there.
Oh.
That was what comprised of the opposing team. Then when they did the arenas, which was like a traveling tour, they would have an opposing team, some guys that they would sign that were specifically for the opposing team, and then other guys they would pick up from that city.
So it was like the Generals?
No, because the Generals, that was all rehearsed, so the Generals were supposed to lose. This was a team that was really trying to beat them.
Oh, right. But it was the same guys. Like, you'll travel with us, but you're just not on our team.
Correct. There were some. They had a few. Like, a few travelers that they would have, and then there were other guys that would just be from that city.
Yeah, because you probably can't get, like, I don't know, 12 really cool, flashy players in Sacramento.
Right, exactly. So you'd want the game to be good.
Last minute, yeah.
And then what happened was N1 started to lose sometimes.
Really?
You know, games, yeah, because the opposing team, you know, more guys started to come out, the more popular it got, and you got really, like, good ball players.
Legit solid players.
Legit solid players. And some of the guys N1 would sign in the opposing team were guys who were really good, you know?
When did the announcer guy come in to the whole mix?
Well, there's always been a streetball announcer and, you know, Rucker and all those guys. So they always had one of those guys at...
So explain to me how that works. It comes out of what? It comes out of those Rucker Park games and shit?
Yeah,
or those tournaments?
So if you the N1 mixtape, Volume 1, was a compilation of real games.
Okay. Oh,
and the
really?
Tape went viral before viral was...
And N1, it was N1 just said...
It wasn't anything.
We'll sponsor you?
No, basically a guy named Ron DeClario, who coached Rafer Alston in high school,
Yeah. Sent
in this highlight tape to N1. And then N1 didn't know what to do with it. And they said, well, why don't we make a tape and put it to music? So they put it out. And then all of a sudden, it started to get so much heat. N1 was like, damn, we got to come up with another tape now. And they, I guess, reached out to – Rafer was already kind of almost in the NBA at this point. These were older footage. And they kind of reached out to some guys in the streetball world, like Rucker, and said, hey, you know, we need some tapes. Can, you know, any of you guys help in? And this dude named Main Event, Wally Dixon – you know, kind of facilitated it, however that happened. And he was like, all right, well, I'll put a game together in my hometown in Linden, New Jersey, and I'll get a bunch of my streetball friends, and we'll put on a game, and you guys can use that.
To videotape it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that was, like, almost the first N1 mixtape game. Main Event grabbed some of his friends that he played with, like Shane the Dribbling Machine, Headache, Future, I'll Be Right Back, and all these guys played. They were the premier streetball players at the time. It was a great game. N1 took highlights of that game, plus some stuff they filmed around the city,
Yeah. Made
another tape. And then that went through the roof, too.
Everybody loved it.
Everyone loved it. Went viral before things were going viral.
You know anything about skateboarding?
I know that's kind of like, I could see where you're going with it because I've heard people compare it, but I don't know anything about it, no.
Okay. I think it's that. It's like, let's follow these guys who are going to be skateboarding all day, and we got to make 90 minutes of like awesome tricks.
Yeah.
You leave out most of the ones they bust out on unless it's like an epic
fall.
And then just like, yeah, make a compilation. People are like, yeah, I could see that. But it's just somebody get crossed up completely.
Yeah.
And fall down and a three-pointer in his face. You're like, yeah, well, we're using that.
Yeah. I've heard of like skateboarding mixtapes and how that's like... Matter of fact, I filmed like some stuff that was streetball and skateboarding collided once.
Really?
Yeah, it was a tape called Brick and Mortar. I did. I was in 10th grade.
I kind of remember that.
Really?
How old are you?
It's a DVD. I'm 26.
So 10th grade was about 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brick and Mortar.
Yeah, I was on that. I did this like little streetball. I wish I had the raw footage. It was so incredible. They taped me in front of the Brooklyn Bridge doing all these dribbling tricks. It was so
dope. While skateboarders are going on around you?
No, like the skateboarding was the second half of the tape.
Oh. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I wish I had the raw footage to this day. There's so much footage I don't have of myself because it's pre-YouTube and all this shit that I'm so mad at no one ever
gave
me.
Cell phone cameras now, though. That's what it's like. Everybody's got a camera at all times.
But I don't have some of my like stuff that I really wish I had. So
yeah,
I kind of I'm sad about that.
I made a slow-mo video last night of like Big J dribbling here on this court.
Are you serious?
On my
you guys
iPhone.
Played here last night?
No. This was like a year ago.
Oh.
But I remember like this looks cool. And he gets up like 3 inches off the ground, you know? But it's
wow.
in the air.
Yeah,
slow
so
motion.
Big J
cool.
Okerson dribbling looks cool. Imagine what it would have looked like with me.
Someone actually knows how to dribble.
Yeah, someone who actually knows how to dribble well.
So the Rucker Park days, it was these tournaments?
Yeah, it's still going on.
Yep. Tournament for money? How would it be? Or just the community putting together some?
No, like I guess different like places would. It costs money to put a team in. But like these were like big sponsors, like so. I guess okay. Nike would put in a team. This guy would put in a team.
Nike put in a team, not just sponsor the event.
Right, put in a team.
And then what would you play for? Trophy or cash?
Yeah, trophy. I don't know what you won. I think you won like a big trophy, and maybe there was some stuff you won. I don't know. I never got that far in that league, so I have no idea. But like Fat Joe put in a team.
Oh, really?
So got rappers would put in a team. Bad Boy put
just
in a team.
He wanted to represent.
Yeah,
wanted to be like
think
part
about
of it.
Back in the day,
yeah.
It was like drug dealers used to put in teams, you know, because that was for all respect. And, you know, guys would be around the neighborhood, you know, and drug dealers would pay the players. You
it's kind of like the Wire when that guy, what is it?
Exactly. That's kind of.
Martell, what's his name?
Right, Avon.
Avon, yeah.
Similar to that. Matter of fact,
and he would play
one
off
of the
great high school players.
If you remember that episode,
yeah.
The ringer, he was called, was Silk, and he played on the N1 team. He's from Baltimore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's from Baltimore.
He's pretending to be a high school player in that time.
Yeah, but they knew he was a ringer. They were like, yo, where the fuck did you get this guy? And then he was doing all the tricks, and he was killing everybody. So Silk is a real dude from Baltimore, one of the most incredible handles I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
I used to play. I had some games with him. He eventually got signed on the N1 team. He's still out there playing.
Does anyone steal a ball from that guy?
Man, he's one of the best high dribblers I've ever seen in my life.
What do you
life.
Mean, high dribblers?
He dribbles high.
And still, nobody can touch
incredible.
It.
Incredible. And he's great at tricks. He could jump. He could shoot. Silk's one of the best streetball players I've ever seen in my life. I remember playing with him. I mean, this guy's catching backwards alley-oops, and then he's crossing up guys. He was great.
Are there guys that are, like, super dominant that just cannot play in the NBA system?
I mean, NBA is just another level, that's all. It's not, you know, it's just another level. Silk, I'm sure, could keep up with an NBA guy, but... You know, I don't know. I don't know how he played in a structured environment or whatever, but I know that guy had a lot of talent. He could score 30, 40 points without sweating. You know, he
really?
Was just super smooth.
Yeah.
That's why, hence the name Silk. So, yeah, Fat Joe had a team, Terror Squad, for years.
And then they
Puff
just
Daddy
also
had a team.
They just hired an announcer to, like,
the little Rucker, the park, the tournament guys who ran the tournament, they hired guys like Duke Tango, who eventually became the announcer for N1.
Duke Tango.
He was the main announcer for N1.
The professor.
That's him, yeah, Duke Tango.
Man,
he's been out there for years.
He gets you so hyped up.
Oh, yeah. All those guys. Hannibal, that was another guy. The original Hannibal. That was a guy who was an announcer.
Duke Tango.
Tango. Yeah. There's another guy. Al Cash, that was another famous announcer. Yeah, these were all guys
with
legendary
guys
announcers. Booby Smooth, that's my guy. Booby Smooth, the politician.
Really?
He was one of my favorite announcers. And he was really funny. It was funny because when I met him when I started doing stand-up, I always said, like, he was asking me, like, oh, you know, you do stand-up. How do you do that? I'm like, you kind of do some form of that. I'm like, you're really funny. I said, you should try it. And he was like, oh, man, I can't do that. You know, but those guys were really good, you know. And plus, trust me, if you, doing announcing in parks with crowds – that's a tough crowd.
Would they get on you if you like?
If you're not like if you were
something stupid.
Yeah, if you're not funny, I mean, that's just I can't imagine. I'm sure they would eat you alive. But those announcers, you know, players were scared of them because they would crack jokes on them and say shit. And you know, it's a tough. It's a fucking.
I used to host the open mic at the Comedy Store for like years. It was like
my spot.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'd make fun of everybody, especially if they bombed. But then like guys like Eric Moneypenny, he's like, I don't want to go on if you're gonna make fun of me if I don't do well. I'm like, I'm gonna make fun of you even if you do well. Like, don't worry about it. Just go do however you want and just know that making fun of is coming.
You just did that kind of keep it, like, just
entertain
yourself.
I don't know. It was
yourself.
So shitty, the open mic. It was like every other comic was, like, beyond terrible, like a crazy person terrible.
You know what's weird is now you almost...
And then the good ones weren't developed.
Now. People take that personal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in some open mics where people take it very personal.
That lady from VH1 with the big hair, she hates Monroe Martin.
Who?
What's her name?
She's a comedian?
Yeah.
Who, Amanda?
No. Half black. I think she might be like part French.
She's a comic?
Yeah, and she has a... Nicole...
I don't know who that is. She hates Monroe?
Something with a boot, something like that.
Why does she hate Monroe?
I don't know. That's why. Because he said something. Like she was on stage and said something about him. Then he went on stage and said something about her. She's like, that's fucking bullshit. And it was like, hey, they're just making fun of you on stage. That shit's allowable.
You know what's weird? Here's the thing. My take on that, actually, is that in a show, I think it's a lot more... And it is acceptable on a show.
They just saw you. They know both you guys.
No, and the thing is, because it's a show, I think open mic people take it personal because, like, we're here to work on stuff.
Oh, right.
So, like, you're shitting on me for who?
Right.
For, like, just to embarrass me. Whereas at a show, it's like, if this is going to get a laugh, me making a joke about you, then it should be all fair game.
I know, but you're right. Because they just saw you. Yeah, I saw Eric Griffin once go on stage, and I was like, he said, I used to bring him up as, like, trying to lose weight. I just helped him lose weight. I was like, yeah, what happened to that? It's not working out anymore, huh?
Right.
And he was like, and then from off stage, he was like, it was the holidays. I'm like, motherfucker, it's mid-February. The last holiday was Valentine's Day. I don't get to have food for that.
And that was at a show.
Yeah, it was at a comedy store, and it was all fun. And but early on when that happens, people take it as like an offense.
I don't know why. Like, at a show, I would not take offense
to it.
It
wasn't even funny. It was just mean. It was like, I don't know, man. You're probably trying to make funny or somebody laughs.
Yeah, no, I don't think at a show, I would never take it personal at a show. I wouldn't take it personal at an open mic either, but I could see why someone would take it personal at an open mic because there's no show. But at a show, I think, you know, you get it. Like, yeah, someone will make fun. I've had people, you know, I've made some jokes about pretending I'm black and all this shit, and then someone makes a joke when they come in. It's like, all right, yeah, I get
you're
it.
White. Yeah, and you're white. Okay.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's their time on stage.
Yeah, I never take that personal.
So how long did you go on tour with N1?
I never went on tour with N1. I was never on the team. I was still in high school and college when that was going on, but I would play games. Like, I played on some of the opposing team games. Like, I'm trying to think of the timeline here. By the way, just as a side note, streetball was so popular then that there were games being outside of N1 going on during the winter. Promoters would put on games.
Right.
So I would be, like, playing with the same guys, but it wasn't necessarily an N1 game.
On a B-League or something.
It's not even a B-League. Like, for instance, like, there was a game one time in Hempstead in Long Island.
Yeah.
It was all the same guys. Hot Sauce. But a promoter
And they would promote them. They would say, like, Hot Sauce and N1 will be there.
Like, it was like...
Just like a comedy show? This like guy a from comedy
show.
Central.
Like the way, like, if I were to produce a show at Eastville Comedy Club, but it's not Eastville's show.
Yeah.
It's my show. So that's what a promoter would do. They'd take out a gym, and they would pay the players however they got the money.
Yeah.
And they would have the same guys and promote it. It would be during the winter.
That guy won't book me at Eastville. I literally lived last year a block away. I lived on 4th between 1st and 2nd, and I was on 4th just inside 2nd. And I was like, dude, I can see your club from where I live.
I can see the comics going on stage. Yeah. Oh, hey, there's my buddy. Oh, wow, he's killing.
You're
That's
really
great.
Not going to have me. Oh, I was so
That's
like,
funny. You're so you can see the club of that. Well, you know what it reminds me of? I went to work. I was a PA at a college on Grown Ups 2, an Adam Sandler's movie, and I was staying at a Red Roof Inn next to. I'm gonna be mad that I can't remember the club. It's a club above a Chinese restaurant, Calhoun's. Called Calhoun's.
Chicopee, Massachusetts.
Yeah, no. It's in Saugus.
Okay.
Okay? I'm next to the club, okay?
Yeah.
There's another club across the street, okay, in a pizza place.
Yeah.
The whole summer I was there, I showed up at this club 3-4 times, each club. They would not give me an audition. And I had referrals. I had Gary Gulman and Richie Menravini, who are from Boston, as referrals. They would not give
Gulman
me any stage time.
Gulman should at least
time.
Be enough.
They
Gulman
would not
alone
give
at least
me.
Be like, I'll let you try out for sure.
I remember Calhoun's. I could just never get in touch with anyone, even when I showed up. And then the other place, I did meet the people. They just wouldn't. They said they would, then they wouldn't put me on. And I was literally at these clubs. And I'm like, I want to say
come
to them,
on,
like,
man, I'm staying right here.
But I also wanted to go, like, no offense, like, I respect your club, but you're not the seller. You're in a pizza place. You're in Saugus on the highway. Let's at least keep it in perspective and give me 5 minutes of stage time.
I have a professional comic who you've heard of. Like
said,
saying,
recommended me. Yeah. You could give me 5 minutes to say you hate me.
Yeah, it's not the seller. It's not like everybody's trying to get in there.
Yeah, it's not.
No one's trying to get there except locals.
Yeah, and I get if someone came to the, you know, obviously you can't come from out of town with no credits and say, can I get on the seller? But that's because it's the seller.
Yeah.
This is not the seller.
But if Chris Rock goes, hey, this guy's from England here, you should put him on, they'll put him on.
Yeah, you're right.
Gary Gulman is way above on that, what Chris Rock is to the seller.
Right.
To a Saugus. Massachusetts place.
In a pizza place where I can get a slice. It's a 2-slice minimum.
Yeah.
And let me on this fucking club.
Can I get a slice? You can get two.
Yeah,
you can pay for two and have one. It's up to you.
I know exactly. That's so funny that you said I can see your club. So that's how I felt. I was literally, this club comedy's going on right at me. And I couldn't get on these two places.
People are like, it's not even that good a club. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, I just wanted to get on. I was just like, I'm literally sleeping. I can hear laughs next door. I'm like, literally, that's where the hotel was. Club, hotel.
There's an open mic on a bar on my street now. And I'd be like, hey, I want to come here one day. He's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, all right, just tell me what it is.
It's so weird. The politics of comedy. It's like everything else.
Yeah, there's a lot of that,
too. The crazy politics. Just
did
like,
did you how much did you get paid for these things?
Yeah, people always ask that question. Streetball range from any amount of money. It could be $200 for a game to $500 to $1,000, depending on who you were.
You know, in golf, they will pay, like the Abu Dhabi Classic and shit, they'll pay Tiger Woods just to come there because they need bigger names in their event to sell their event.
Yeah.
So they'll pay them off the top, and then it's like prize pool is prize pool. Anyone competes for that evenly. But like, if you're like Phil Mickelson, like, we'll just give you $100,000 if you come.
To show up, yeah. Not even play.
Because he has a bigger name. So
right.
Is it like where everyone who has a different size name gets paid a different amount?
Correct.
Okay.
Until, yeah, and I think even...
Because the professor being there is going to draw a lot more people than you being there.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, everyone gets paid differently. I mean, obviously the contracts with N1 were different, you know, because those were contracts. But I'm sure those were different too. But like promoting games and game by game basis, yeah, we're very different. Like when I went overseas, I played in Chile with the N1 guys, not the N1 team.
Right.
N1 guys.
Just that street ball.
It was just street ball games. So I got paid, I think, like $500 to $600 a game.
Wow.
So I'm sure.
And how often did you play?
Well, though I did two games over there.
Two. Okay.
That was just for that game.
And travel?
And travel, yeah.
Okay,
pay
that's
for your
great.
Ticket. We stayed at the Sheraton. Very
they
nice.
Put you up too?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Always,
oh, that's
yeah.
great, man. So it's like a real road gig.
Yeah, absolutely. It was awesome.
Wow, that's pretty
good.
But
I'm sure every... So, for instance, like...
$1,200 to go or $1,100 to go to Chile, all expense paid? Well, not
yeah,
all
we took
paid,
like 11 flights while we were there because it took us like two... We traveled when we were there, too. We went to a smaller city, so I took probably like 11 flights in a week.
Wow, that's cool.
But yeah, I'm trying to think. So, for instance, like, so AO, who was on that trip, who was one of the most popular streetball players, he was not getting paid $600. I'm sure he was getting paid, you know,
he would never
at
show
least.
Up for that.
No. I'm sure he was getting paid at least, you know, $1,000 or two for, you know, at least. You know, so.
Did those guys eventually just get too old and stop being able to play? Or how does it end for those guys? Like, where's the professor now? Where's AO now?
Well, those two are actually still playing on a streetball team called Ball Up. That's based out of LA, and they still tour. On a smaller level.
Oh, cool.
So AO and Professor still play. Professor's, you know, one of the biggest players out.
He some still guys, has that name.
Oh, yeah. Professor still makes a great living and is one of the most popular streetball players today.
MMA guys like that can keep doing that. Like Chuck Liddell can fight way after his prime is over because they're
yeah.
like, I just saw Chuck Liddell fight, you know.
Yeah, some
like
of those
name.
Guys are still playing. Some of them are kind of like retired, you know, obviously not
yeah.
doing other things.
Did they open up like... Like, what are they? What's the you know, fallback plan? Or is it just selling, you know, mattresses? Or insurance somewhere.
I think everyone has a different story.
Yeah.
Everybody, there's a different story for each guy. You know, I mean.
I mean, I get scared about comedians. Like, what's going to happen after comedy stops paying? I'm a little
mean,
safer
paying?
Now, but like, you know how you can survive in comedy well enough for a while, but then it's like you become like 50 with no credits, and like no one's going to have you at their club, and it's like, oh, I can't make money at this anymore. But I got to like put food in my mouth. So then
yeah.
they end up selling used cars or shit.
Well, I mean,
you know?
I'm sure, but that person's probably always had a side job throughout
oh, right.
that time, right?
Yeah. I know one guy is about to get a day job again. It's like, oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough... I can't imagine. I guess my creed that I go, I don't even think like that. I guess... I don't know. I can't
yeah.
even... I can't... I feel like if you do think like that, then it's going to fuck you up. Like, I feel like anybody that really, like, puts the work in... I think a lot of people don't really... who haven't made it to where they want, don't really put the necessary work in. It's just something I believe. Butch, I'm sorry, we're talking streetball too. This Butch Purcell. How many championships did you win? Two with the Rucker. Two with the Summer Pro League. I know, I was telling him about Hunter College, everything.
Both back to back.
In your prime. Those are the days.
Coaching.
Oh, okay.
Ocean.
Yeah, he doesn't pass enough, right? Uh-huh. He doesn't pass enough.
I pass. Yeah, Butch play with my father.
You play with his dad?
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Check this
out. His father what?
He said he wouldn't pass the towel in the huddle. Butch, I'll see you soon. You going to be around? We're going to be playing in the other court.
I'm around, man. You got it.
All right. Great to see you, Butch. Bye, Butch. There we go. See, this is the atmosphere out here.
Yeah. He coaches those teams. Are those 5-on-5s?
Yeah, yeah. Those were regular games. Those were he coached the Rucker Park. This is going back some years, but yeah. And so my father also coached at Rucker as well. He won 5 championships.
Can I say who? Peter?
Yeah.
Peter Vesey?
Yeah. He coached. He brought Julius Erving up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, wow.
And so there were NBA scouts there at those places? College scouts,
for
sure?
No, I don't know if there were scouts. I mean, maybe college scouts eventually, but not back then, no.
No. It was just for the love of the game.
Yeah, just for the love of the game. Place was packed.
Was it like anything like that White Man Can't Jump tournament? They have like 2-on-2s and like...
Yeah, not 2-on-2s, but yeah, it's, I guess, but that was more like based on pickup basketball, like hustling. Yeah, but I remember that tournament you're talking about.
Yeah, but the tournament, they all stayed all city.
They've had 3-on-3 tournaments throughout the city, but yeah, sort of like that, I guess, but just...
No.
Not really, I guess.
Yeah. I see it's tepid, like,
by the way, I'm still angry at that whoever was the basketball consultant on that movie, because...
Why?
It was just some of the worst... I mean, Wesley Snipes is one of the worst basketball players I've ever seen in my life. And the fact that the way they told him to do stuff, it's like, this is horrendous.
Oh, you know what? I watched it when I was so young. I didn't even consider, like...
It's one of the...
He wasn't really flashy at all. He could just hit shots.
But no, but even the way they showed him dribbling and the way he passed, it was awful. I mean, the movie's a good movie, but boy, is it terrible basketball.
It's hilarious to see somebody, like, try to play a sport. And it's like, well, I trained for 6 months to do this. And it's like, you can't train for 6 months and be fluid at a sport with people like that look good, have been playing since they were 5 or 6. You know, same with like boxing, definitely like pitching, you know, any sort of baseball thing. It's like, you don't look natural.
Yeah, no, that's why that's why Above the Rim was such a great movie, because Dwayne Martin was a real basketball player.
Right.
And played street ball. Did you ever see Above the Rim?
A long time ago. Was that with was that rapper?
That was Tupac.
Tupac, yeah.
Wood Harris, who was Avon Barksdale.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they killed that homeless guy, right?
Bernie Mac.
That was Bernie Mac?
That was Bernie Mac. Was the homeless guy in Above the Rim. Yeah.
They went in later at night.
Pee Wee Kirkland, streetball legend, played the college scout in that movie.
Really?
And Pee Wee Kirkland, just so you know how funny that is, Pee Wee Kirkland not only is one of the best streetball players of all time, right?
Yeah.
He was like listed like number 2, 3 of all time.
Really?
In the world, right? Who could have made it to the NBA, was one of the biggest drug dealers back in the day.
Oh.
And here he is in his movie playing a college scout who actually gets mad at Dwayne for trying to be unethical. So that's
really
how funny that is. And, yeah, I mean, the people that are in that movie, Tupac, Marlon Wayans, I mean, the movie is incredible. And Dwayne is a real ball player, so the basketball looks good. Everything about it's awesome.
Even like, not Drumline, but
Drumline.
What's that new drum movie? Whiplash.
Oh, I
where they're
see
like,
that.
That guy plays drums. So he's not as good as a fucking virtuoso, but it's like, oh, he looks like he's playing drums.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'd be a good asset to Hollywood if they ever want to make a basketball movie, because I could actually fucking be
look
funny
like you're playing.
And I can play basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Hollywood, listen up.
Yes. Guys, if you're making basketball movies, I'm your guy.
There's some guy in the team. Everyone's going to make fun of a white dude. Why not be Joe Vesey?
I am actually working. I actually outlined a basketball comedy that I want, because Adam Sandler is a good ball player. And I want him. Yeah, and I always wanted to, like, I said, I got to have this in my, like, you know, stash just in general, just for anything.
Would you be willing to put on glasses to look more white?
I'd be willing to do anything that involved a Hollywood movie at this point. There's not too much. Otherwise, I said, would you be willing to put on glasses? I'd be
like
willing to pull my penis out as long as Miramax is behind this. I'm willing to do anything. I'm down for anything.
Be careful about hot tub parties. I'm going to ask you to do some stuff. You can't say no.
Yeah, I'm in.
What was the drugs like at these places?
The drugs?
At the pickup courts.
Oh. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. In Rucker, and especially back then, like I said, drug dealers sometimes were behind a lot of teams.
Right.
So there was, I'm sure, even still now, there's drug dealers who would, like, let's say someone puts a team in, and then these drug dealers are paying the guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they want this player. You know what
I
mean?
But they're doing it not to, like, increase their, like, drug trade at all. They just want to have a successful basketball team.
Correct. And just the respect of the neighborhood.
Like,
you know?
When Joe Gibbs gets into racing.
Yeah,
he's
it's like
I want to do this.
It's like, it's just cool points, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like you walk around the neighborhood, like, yo, I got my team won the championship Rucker. I got this guy. I got
like
this
Gibbs
dude.
Gibbs is still bragging about it for fucking hell many years ago.
Exactly. I mean, rappers did the same thing. For instance, there was a guy, again, rest in peace, a guy named John Strickland. They called him the franchise. One of the best streetball players in New York. He played on Fat Joe's team every summer. Fat Joe, I assume, was paying him money, because that's how it worked. Jay-Z then finally put in a team at Rucker 1 year. He said, I'm going to put a team in one time. That's it, 1 year.
Yeah.
Win the championship. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to do that one time.
And,
well, I'll tell you in a second, but he wanted John Strickland, because he knew John Strickland. And So he said, I'll give you, I guess Fat Joe, he's like, what's he giving you, 20 grand? 25.
Really?
And Strickland went, and I remember a lot of people gave him shit for that too, and even in the crowd.
They were like, yo. For not having loyalty?
Yeah, no loyalty. You turned on Joe for 5 grand, you know. So
yeah, I could see doubling it, but for 5 extra, for 20% extra, I don't know. Stay,
you know,
on your team.
So, and Jay, long story short, the championship ended up being Terror Squad versus Jay-Z's team. The game never happened. And
why?
There's no reason for me to really even go into it. You should just check out and tell people to listen to watch the documentary. There's a whole documentary on why this game didn't happen.
Is it on YouTube?
Yes, it's incredible.
I'll put that on my website.
The
I'll
documentary is about an hour and 15, and it was great. The game could have been one of the most legendary games of all time. Shaq was supposed to play. LeBron was supposed to play.
High school LeBron?
Yep.
Wow.
He was supposed to be incredible.
What was the name of the documentary?
I don't know the name of it. But if you Google like Fat Joe versus Jay-Z Rucker Championship, it'll come up. It's about an hour documentary. And so according to Fat Joe and Jay-Z have never spoken to this day.
Because of that?
Yeah. So, well, I'm sure there's other things, but they never were the best of friends and this sort of, you know, was like a rival. And he said, we've never talked. He even said we were once in the same elevator together, never said anything. Like, they have like a weird unspoken beef.
It's weird how when you're like friends or in the same region as somebody, you get this real beef. Like, Triple E said he just made up with Joe Coy. And I always think I know the reasons why they were all fighting, or Triple E didn't respect
Joe
Coy.
Who was this beef?
Sam Triple E.
I don't know.
Comedian.
That okay.
But then I just found out, he's like, yeah, you know what? We were both started in Vegas together. And it was like, I was like, oh, so you guys hate each other from coming up. That's like a different kind of hatred. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of them, and we know that. There's sometimes stuff that doesn't get talked out can be a beef.
Over a chick or something, or over like...
I kind of got that right now with a comedian, over a chick.
Who's trying to bone one of your exes?
Well, it's... No, not even like that, but they're... Yeah, no, because honestly, that wouldn't really be bad unless we were like best friends, because we all are in the same scene, so I would never get mad at that. Something different of when I was with her, so... So, and you know what the thing is? And you know what the funny thing is? People like... When they just hear that, like when I've told people that before, they go, oh, man, but whatever, you know, with her now or whatever. It's no
big
deal.
They don't have the feelings. You have the feelings.
Yeah, and the thing is, they don't know how deep it goes. They think it goes like past like, oh, you just tried to fuck her one night. I'm like, dude, you really think if it was that, you know, whatever, I wouldn't just get past it? I said, I'm sure one day I will not give a fuck about it. But I said, it's more of the principle of it. I said,
oh, yeah.
So
it's
many
like
people,
you're the guy who's not going to respect me that I have a girlfriend.
Right. So in this business, I go, there's so many people that... will say, well, I can't do this because his status is here, so I can't do this. And I say that.
Fuck
I'm
that.
Like,
be a human.
At some point, yes,
be
you got to be a human and be a man.
Boom, half court
and so, yeah, I kind of have that with a dude now. And it's weird when I see him, but it's funny. We've never had a direct-on confrontation, yet it's all just through – it's in the air.
It's amazing. When those are in the air, you kind of like just sort of like – it's like a small amount of hatred, and then when you actually have it out, like, now I'm ready to fucking fight, and it could be years later because it doesn't bubble up enough.
Yeah, so we don't...
Two in a throw, 3-pointers.
I kind of established that. I was like, yeah, we're not going to speak.
Oh,
and
really?
That's kind of... Because he was still saying what's up to me, and then I started to be like, I just, you know, the more it built up and the more crazy it got, I was like, you know what, fuck this. I was like, I'm not even going to pretend. Like, I'm not even...
Yeah, like, we both know what happened. You're just ignoring it as if it's like, let's move past it. But it's like, you've never apologized.
Right.
So how are we going to move past it when you'll still do it again?
Well, the thing is, and the funny thing about the situation is, it's like, it's not even he has anything to apologize for. Because honestly, when you're with somebody, it's more on them to cut off the outside person. It's not really...
Just hit 3 half-quarters in a row.
Who? Someone
that
just hit half-quarters?
In the black shirt and the baseball cap. He just hit 3 in a row. One was a bank.
Really? Is he going to make that? No. This guy's shooting half-court shots?
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just saying that. Yeah, so it's a weird thing.
I know,
but it's funny that you just brought that up.
Involved. My friend Adam had this thing where he's like, this waitress at the Comedy Store, you know? And she was so fucking hot.
Right.
And we all wanted to bone her. And then he did. And then he started dating her.
And then there was beef?
No. But then afterwards, they broke up. And they broke up heavily.
Right.
And then it was like 6 months later, someone else boned her. And he's like, this is disrespectful. And I'm like, no, man. The disrespect is if he would have not waited till you guys broke up. Not only did he wait till you broke up, he waited 6 months afterwards.
Well, here's the thing. I think
she wasn't introduced as your girlfriend. She was introduced as a comic at the store that was like free agent. And then you just hooked up with her. And we all still wanted her.
Right.
It wasn't
but that's
me
not
even,
like,
but,
okay.
No, that's not the same thing as when you're actually dating her.
No.
But the people like, it's disrespectful. It's like, you're just setting the line on your own.
Exactly. Well, I think here's the difference. Like, if me and you were best friends,
damn, just hit it from there.
This guy's just chucking up half court shots. It's not that impressive as Ari's making it right now.
You get 3 out of 4.
I'm still not impressed. The half court is not that far away.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's a way more than an NBA 3.
I guess, yeah. Ari clearly is impressed very easily.
How about from here? If he hit it from here?
If he hit it from here, I'll be impressed and stop the podcast. I would not have stopped the podcast the way you did. If he makes this one, we'll stop it. Here's the thing. If we were best friends in the comedy scene, you start dating my ex, I think that would be fucked up.
That would be wrong.
But if we just know each other, we're all in the same scene, I don't think I have a right to be like pissed at you.
Yeah. That's what would have been the real, like, on Friends, when Joey started dating one of their other, like, ex-girlfriends.
Yeah.
They all ended up fucking each other. That should have been like, hey, man, well, we're not friends anymore.
Well, yeah, it's... If that went in. I think it's... Yeah, it's a really tricky thing, though. Yeah, with comedy in the scene. That's why I try not to. I'm going to try not to date in the scene again, just for my own sanity, because I just think it kind of shifted my focus a little bit at times where it didn't need to be, especially when you're trying to come up. And
yeah, my thing is not to date waitresses at the club that you're always going to be at. Like those stand waitresses, some of them are so hot, you get flirty, but then it's like, this is a bad idea.
Yeah, I dated a hostess at the stand. Yeah, a while back.
Which one?
She's not there anymore.
Which one?
Well, I mean,
hold on. I don't even remember.
I just have funny. I love if people could have just heard that off the thing. Like we,
which one?
Which one? She was black. I don't know her.
I don't remember the black
didn't
hostess.
See her. Didn't see the black hostess. How typical. But yeah. So, I mean, street ball, I think, was all about respect, and a lot of those rappers would put in teams for the respect, and that's what it was all about. Fat Joe is actually a huge basketball fan. He really coached at Rucker. He showed up to every game, and it was serious. Jay-Z didn't show up. Maybe he might show up to one.
He just posed.
Jay-Z was more about just like, yo. That's where Fat Joe, I think, took it as a sign of you're just doing this to.
You're just putting money in. You don't even care about this shit.
You don't even care. Right. That's where he took it as disrespect, because he stole one of his players and was just doing it for the show.
Right.
Fat Joe was there for years every game.
Yeah.
Every game.
Yeah, you got to get your own players.
Yeah, so that was kind of shitty. Fat Joe is he's such a character too. I've known Fat Joe for years through basketball. He actually came to one of my high school games. He's always been supportive of me. He's like just such a good dude. Yeah, such a good dude.
Really? What is he? Latino? What is he?
Spanish, yeah.
Okay.
One of the real gangsters back in the day for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a dude to be fucked with.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, absolutely. One of this you don't see it now because he's such a good dude.
He just made money and now he's like.
He said he knew he had to change because there was no point of acting like that anymore. He said it cost him money in the beginning. He said there were people that wouldn't approach him because they were so
scared.
Because
he was such a fucking
standoffish dude,
right?
He's seriously one of the nicest guys, and I've met a lot of guys like rappers through basketball. There was a night at Chelsea Piers Sports Club. I used to play every night there, and Tuesday night was like industry night, pickup basketball, and it was like, I mean, this is one night. It was just on the bat, just pickup ball. It was me, DJ Clue, Jadakiss, Game, Charlie Baltimore watching on the sidelines. Philip Seymour Hoffman on the sidelines,
really?
Playing, watching. It was crazy there. It was so dope. And I remember I played on the games team, pickup basketball. We won every game that night. It was fun, man. Like, it was, I just met a lot of good people through basketball that you still kind of have that bond with to this day. And now going to comedy entertainment, basketball playing, especially the way I played ball, kind of has helped me still to this day, because I have a bond with certain people who are in entertainment through basketball.
Like Jay said, he opened up for Korn for a long time. And they're like, yeah, when you do your special, we'll do the opening soundtrack.
Yeah, see, like, how cool. Fucking crazy is that? No, absolutely. So, yeah, whereas, like, and I can only imagine the more I move up, the more, people that want to do even more bigger favors, because then there's a lot of people
who are into comedy, too. They're like, wow, you do that? Like, all these MMA fighters, like, legit top-shelf guys. Like, wow. I saw your show the other day.
It's so big. Yeah, it's so cool, too, because everyone wants to do everyone else's field,
Yeah.
When I listen to Eminem, I've definitely thought about being on stage rapping. I was like, that look cool.
Yeah. That's all those musical comics. They all really want to be rock stars.
Yeah.
I mean, not completely, but that's a big part of it.
Oh, yeah.
They're not just playing goofy songs. They're actually like the interlude. They're really playing guitar.
Sandler sang some real songs on Letterman.
Really?
Yeah, just did some covers. He did Radio City.
Really?
When he toured. Remember that? He toured with his comedy albums.
No, I don't remember that. I mean, his comedy albums were amazing because they were sketch albums, so you could listen to them over and over again. But like, what were the groupie situation like at the streetballs games? Yeah.
What is it? Group? Like women? Yeah. Oh, I mean, girls that definitely in Harlem. I mean, definitely. I mean, I was a little kid then, so keep in mind, like, I don't really like remember it like that.
How long did you play there on these on the street ball courts?
Well, I'm just saying, like, when I was up hanging out at Rucker, and when I played at the EBC one time, I was like in high school, so.
Right.
I just don't really remember like that.
So no girls were like trying to like touch you and come on to you?
Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, that never happened. But there would be a lot of girls around. In the streetball world, of course, yeah, I mean, I just at that time, even my first year in college, I was a little like shy and I was more closed off than I was then. So I didn't really like see that much.
Right, you didn't know what to look for too.
Yeah, I was not like, and I've never been a groupie like type of dude too. Like a girl, if a girl came up to me once, like if she did come up to me after a show and was like, "Oh, I want to suck your dick," that probably like, wouldn't be a turn on.
That would not be a turn on.
Not really. I mean, unless she was like, you know, I don't know.
The problem is, it's like nice to have it that like clear instead of like you were funny and be like, "How am I going to parlay that into a blowjob?" As opposed to like, "I want to suck your dick." You're like too easy.
Yeah,
it's like a weird thing.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I just but yeah, groupies. I mean, trust me. Yeah, these streetball dudes. I mean. Fucking,
yeah, they were
they
around though, right?
Oh yeah, they. I mean,
was anybody fucking like?
Guys were fucking in the same room, and I just never got into
same
that.
Room?
Guys on the Bass streetball team, they would not like their only
same hotel room.
Yeah, same room, and I'm like, why? And I'm like, I don't. If the dudes are outnumbering the girls in the room, I don't want to be there. And I remember dudes would be like, "Yo, but Joe, like, if you doing what you got to do in that corner, you ain't gonna be worried about what I'm doing in the other corner." I'm like, I'd still be worried.
Okay. I'd still be worried.
I'm like, I can hear you. I don't want to hear you. Like, it's just nasty.
Yeah, what if you're looking at me?
I can't. I mean, I know for a fact I would not be able to get it up if you're just having sex with this other girl across the room. I did it in a room
with Bobby Lee once, but we were just on the makeout sessions. Like, you know, but those are like a bed right next to another bed, you know? But I just kept hearing him say, like, goofy shit to get his girl to, like, calm down. So, like, we were making out. I just heard Bobby going, "Can I touch your arm? I just touch your arm."
It's just weird, like, right?
I just had to keep laughing.
Yeah, it's just I've never been a guy to.
Yeah,
I'm not with other guys being in the room. But yeah, those guys, man, they went out. They got a lot of women. They were rock stars. Especially
were there girls that would come like over and over again? You don't remember?
My theory is
that there's groupies on every athletic and like a comedy, anything like that's any sort of like weirdo thing. Probably even like not weirdo things. It's probably like. Well, I'm saying politicians, but like those are weirdo jobs too. But like there are girls that like my friend was a professional bowler and they had groupies, but they were gross, you know, and the MMA groupies were like porn stars.
I mean, keep in mind, I wasn't on the tour bus and I wasn't on like traveling like that. So a lot of times it was like comedy gigs. I would go do a show or do a game and leave. So it wasn't like I was so much up for that. I also don't drink. I don't smoke.
Right.
So even in the comedy scene, there's stories like I hear dudes talk about.
Yeah.
And
but you're not seeing it.
Because I'm just not. Into that.
I heard somebody talking about, Mike Ricca was talking about how this old comic was talking about in the 80s, you know, everybody was getting laid all the time. And he goes, no, Robin Williams was getting laid. You were watching because you were no one. It was like, oh yeah, maybe you're right.
I mean, I'm sure as you move up, you get some, like it becomes more clear and it becomes more extravagant.
Yeah, I bet like the professor and stuff, people with names, people must have gone up to them.
Oh
like,
no, I'm sure.
Hi, what are you doing later?
Oh, no, I'm sure. On that, especially those dudes, when the N1 show was on ESPN2, when it was so big, oh, of course. And they had buses, and they're staying at five-star hotels. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm sure it was nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, they would tell me. I just had High Octane on my podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what it was a streetball legend. The Callback.
The Callback?
Yeah.
What's it about?
It's all about process, career, and stuff with comedians. Well, anybody. It can be any field. But it's also about getting in the nitty-gritty stuff of process and the art of stuff whatever field it is. So when I had an acting coach on, we talk about that.
Process.
I had a writer on.
I like that.
Everything. It's very
academic talks about a thing.
I'm asking questions from a young perspective, so I'm asking every question anyone would want to know about a behind the scenes thing. And I'm like, people have come up to me and been like, you've maybe asked that guy everything you could ask him. Like I just every little part I'm asking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like this podcast.
Yeah, it's just like every... Like when I was asking Chris... When I had Chris Rock on mine...
You had Chris Rock on?
I asked him about the writing of one of his scripts, and I remember him going, yeah, we did it like this, but I don't know, but I was like, no, what was... You were in front of the computer, you guys traded off scenes. Like, I was like... Like, he was answering it still too vaguely. I was like, no, but who was in front of the computer?
I know exactly what it was like. Yeah.
It was everything.
Yeah, it's not
I had
just
to
like,
break it down.
You know, you get on stage and you tell jokes. Like, no, where before that, where do you write your jokes? How do you find the stage?
There were so many people I've had on my podcast where I go, what was your big break? And they're like, well, when I was opening up for Cosby. No. How did you get that?
Yeah.
Well, when I was on tour with Kevin Hart. No, no, no. How'd you, you're not understanding
there's
what the break
there's
means.
There's a saying about success and failures, and it's because this, everybody looks at a big break as like there's so many different things, you know?
Yeah.
Getting past the comedy store, getting starting the show, doing the. But like they say, success has many mothers, but failure's a bastard.
Yeah.
They all look back at that one time like, fucking, if that guy didn't distract the club owner, I would have been great. But like success is like, yeah, that guy helped me. You see any club around New York, like Seinfeld started here. But it's like seven clubs that say that.
I guess I just mean the break where, to me, a break would be when you started getting paid consistently or you made it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because if you get past the comedy store, you don't quit your day job and I'm done for life. I think, but when you get a job writing for Adam Sandler, yeah, I would say that was your break.
Right. Because
now you have a career.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's like looking at the guy from Gladiator.
Who's that?
He's an actor. The main guy from Gladiator.
I don't watch movies. I don't watch movies. Those types of movies.
He was also in Beautiful Mind. He was the main guy from Beautiful Mind.
Fuck, I don't know.
Well, whatever his name is, people are like, oh, that was your big break. And they're like, no. He was in Mulholland Falls.
Yeah.
Years and years before. Or Mulholland Drive, one of those two. And it was like a decent-sized part, which at the time, he'd been like, I've made it.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Seventh lead, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing. Like, people think, like we said, I mentioned Kevin Hart before. Like, he, you know, just became huge. But he's kind of been consistently working.
Right.
Since even Soul Plane bombed. You
know
what I
mean? Right. But he was known for that.
It's always like, even when people go like, oh, Louis, you know, he deserves this. I'm like, this guy's been working consistently for 20 years. He's been
fine. A-level headliner a decade and a half ago.
You know what I'm saying?
Just become famous.
He used to write for Conan. That was making it. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's a good job.
Yeah, exactly.
Conan O'Brien was writing for SNL. He's been around. These guys have been fine way before.
Probably the SNL thing was the main
thing. Yeah. These guys have been working.
What comics are like great streetball players?
Great streetball players. I'm trying to think. I haven't
or
played
just
with
like
every
real
comic.
Solid. What have you heard? What have you seen?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I've heard that Chris DiStefano, because he played like college, and played a little bit overseas, I think. So I know Chris can play.
Paul Morrissey is shockingly good.
Who?
Paul Morrissey. He's this fat redhead kid. He says not
redhead,
but he is. But he played Division III for like 5 years. He started 5 years because he transferred too.
Okay. I'm trying to think. So I haven't played with Chris, but he's the only one I can think of the top of my head. But honestly, the other best comic that I've played basketball with, I gotta say is Nick Swartzen and Adam Sandler.
Swartzen is good.
Yeah, I gotta say Nick Swartzen and Adam Sandler.
Nick Swartzen is good at basketball.
Yeah.
Wow.
He can really shoot, and he knows how to play.
Really?
That's the thing.
The Sklar brothers had good like baseline jumpers.
Knowing how to play is a big part of it. You know what I mean? Oh, by the way, Goleman is really good. Gary Goleman is really good.
Yeah. As my athleticism has gone way down, it wasn't that great to begin with, but as it's gone down, it's like the things that are kept in my game are like, I know how to like hit people cutting.
I'll be honest, that day we played, I don't remember, so I'm curious to see today. We're going to play at 3 o'clock. I don't remember that day well.
More than ever.
But Adam Sandler can really play.
Adam Sandler
can
play.
He can shoot, he can dribble, he can play. Here's the thing, he knows how to play the game, he's competitive, he plays a lot, so he's just a good ball player. Like if I saw him, I'd be like, oh, he's a good ball player.
There is that thing to like, you know the rules. You know how to like fucking screen and run and move around and not just stand there.
Yeah. And by the way, that's another reason, because you asked me like we talked about basketball, like you said it was a waste of time, like all those hours. But not only did I get paid for playing street ball when I played, but also like when I was a PA, which is the lowest on the totem pole, I was invited to play with Sandler the whole summer to play basketball.
Really?
So
what do you mean?
Like, he brought me to play. He plays on set every other day.
Because he knew you were good?
Colin Quinn told him I played.
Damn.
I'm good friends with Colin. Colin knows I play ball. Colin is good, by the way. Colin is shockingly quick.
Really?
And especially Colin's like 50 or something.
Yeah.
Colin's shockingly quick. So me and... I don't know if Colin's seen me play before. No, he hadn't. But Colin was in Grown Ups 2. And I told Colin, I said, you know, I'm going to work on Grown Ups 2, whatever. I heard Adam. Someone told me Adam plays ball. Is that true? I was like, all right. Colin says, yeah, I'll let him know. And I was like, okay. I didn't know he was going to really let him know. And then when I came to set, Adam was like, oh, I heard you. Colin told me you play ball. You played street ball. And he was asking me about it. I said, yeah. He's like, all right. So one day they played. And the first day I played was, it was me and someone else on set. I think it was me and Sandler's, one of his buddies, versus Sandler and Quinn.
Yeah.
And that was the first time we had played. And I remember Colin is so funny. He's playing defense on me. And he's so thrilled by what I'm doing that he's like having a good time on defense. Like every time I did a move, Colin was like, oh! oh, hey! Like he was enjoying it. Like getting, like, if I did a move on him, he'd be like, oh, man, Adam, did you see that? Like, Colin, you're playing against me.
Done on you.
Yeah. Like, how about it was garbage? Like, it was like basically equivalent to like Shaq played with us on Grown Ups 2.
Oh, really?
And Shaq dunked on Kevin James's assistant, and we were all so jealous. Like,
I know
we were
that
like,
guy.
Fuck. Like, yo, you got dunked on by Shaq. Like, I was dying to get dunked on by Shaq. Shaq dunked on Kevin James' assistant and then stared him down and looked at him. And, like,
really?
Like, so we were all so, like, jealous.
Gino, is that his name? Gino? Something like that?
Oh, you know Gino?
Yeah, I met him.
How do you know Gino?
His sister was someone I used to, like, flirt with.
That's so funny because I forgot his name until you said it. Gino's a really good dude, and
he's
then
a really
he's
good
not
dude.
His assistant anymore. I think he moved on. Like,
you gotta
he
gotta move up from assistant at some point.
Is he a comic? Or
no, no.
That's
but then
so
Renna Zissi knew him because of Mall Cop. Because Renna Zissi did Mall Cop with Kevin James.
Okay.
And then it was like between that and the sister, it was like.
That's so funny. Yeah, so yeah. Gino was playing with us. It was Lochran, who's Sandler's buddy, actor, and works with him, and Peter Dante, Swartz, and we all played. So throughout the whole summer, my point of this whole conversation was that street ball, playing the way I played, helped me get in that game. If I was just a regular ball player, I'm sure I could have still played, but the fact that I had this extraness also encouraged, like, oh, this is kind of a cool thing, and bring it makes the games more competitive and
it's
fun.
Hell yeah.
So Sandler got a kick out of it, everyone had a good time, and the games were competitive, and it was like the best, one of the best summers of my life.
I bet. You ever hear about somebody from our team actually played with Sandler for, or at least he like worked for him for Grown Ups, and he was real good.
Who? Well, from your team?
It was a comedians basketball league in L.A. Fuck, I forget his name. Real short, probably like 5'3".
And he's a comic.
Quick.
Brandon?
Yes, Brandon.
I know Brandon played with us because he works with Sandler. Yeah, I know Brandon. I got to text him.
He was quick.
So because you were in L.A. a good amount, so is this why? So this is why we have some of the same then mutual people that we know. Because I wouldn't expect you to know Gino, and this, that just seems like random.
After a while in Hollywood, you just meet some people. But I forgot he did that.
Also, as you move up, it becomes a smaller community.
Oh, yeah. And you're there longer, you get to know more people. And then the basketball game, we had a comedian's basketball game on Saturdays.
Brandon's good. He played
good.
Like,
I remember stealing the ball once and, like, throwing it to Brandon. And then, like stealing it at, sometimes I would guard, like, on top of the, like, if we got guys who would just rain threes.
Yeah.
They would put me out there because I'm not quick. Like, you can go around me, but, like, you're not getting a three off against me.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, and so we'll see what happens today at three, but go on.
All right. But, like, I stole a ball, and he was on the other guard. I just passed to him. He passed it right back to me. And I'm like, no, man, you just run. You just take the ball and run. I'm not going to keep up with you. And then he just, like, ran down and, like, beat everybody on the.
I think Brandon, how's he doing? I know he was writing
scripts.
He's doing
pretty good. He kept leaving in the playoffs. That's why the fucking our team couldn't win. Sean Kemp's
kids. Have you seen him do stand-up? I haven't seen him.
Mm-mm.
Brandon's a good guy. He played that day with us and Shaq. He was playing that day.
Yeah.
He was
in and out of stand-up.
Okay. Well, I know he's writing more. He's working on scripts. He's a really nice guy.
He kept having to leave for grown-ups and grown-ups, too. I'm like, dude, we have playoffs coming.
That's funny. Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah, so that was like an example of street ball fucking still helping me to this day.
What did your dad say about such a disrespectful form of basketball?
He always, well, think about it. He did coach
he's
at
like
Rucker.
A purist, right?
So there was a, he is pure, but there was a certain flash even at Rucker when he coached, years ago.
Okay.
So he likes that background. He liked Pistol Pete. He liked that type of style.
Pistol Pete kind of was like would have been that kind of player, right?
He was.
He was?
Yeah.
He was just a street ball
Pistol
player?
Pistol Pete is ahead of his time. The moves he still does today, people still aren't doing. Pistol Pete is...
Really?
Ridiculous.
I remember seeing some of his videos at basketball camp of his like dribbling with two balls in each hand and like, damn.
Yeah, no, he's still some of the stuff he does. People have copied. So my father played ball with Pistol Pete back in the day. So he likes that type of ball. I mean, I'm not saying like he like loved watching it, but he had no problem with it.
Right.
He had
no
problem with it.
I remember those Pistol Pete videos, and they had like the Pro Kids song in the background.
Yeah,
like, Pro Kids.
Yeah,
I was like a real basketball shoe.
I wish Pistol Pete were around to see the N1 stuff. He would have
died,
been,
right?
He died. He had a hole in his heart.
Oh.
Yeah, he would have got a real kick out of it. But yeah, Pistol Pete. Yeah, a lot of people copied his.
What about
moves.
Earl the Goat Manigault? People like that.
Yeah.
Did you ever read Heaven is a Playground?
Yes, that was Heaven is a Playground is by what's his name? Forgetting the writer.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Did you read it?
I did read it. It was about Bernard King or Bernard King's brother.
Heaven is a Playground is had a lot of stuff about Rodney Parker in there. Do you know who Rodney Parker is?
Mm-mm.
He was like a guy around the neighborhood that coached and mentored a lot of guys. He was in that a lot. He kind of was the the filter, the source in for that author. I really want to know author's name because the author is really famous. Heaven is a Playground.
He was a sports writer.
Yeah.
And he just went and embedded himself like for a whole summer, right?
Right. And Rodney Parker was his, you know, like in.
Oh, really?
Was his to get pipeline. In with him? And Rodney Parker, he passed away a few years ago. He was a good dude. He was like the guy who was, oh, yeah, that kid, and kind of referring guys and helping guys. He was like in the basketball community.
And they said Bernard King at 14 was so. Was it Bernard King? No, who played for the Wizards?
Is it Rick Tellender?
Yeah. Yes.
Am I right about that? I want to make sure.
Look it up?
Yeah.
But I remember this 14-year-old fucking leading the team of 14-year-olds to like a near championship.
Let me see. Heaven is a Playground, because I actually did an article on Rodney Parker.
Really?
Yeah, I used to do journalism for like, I still do it for Slam magazine.
Send it to me. Is it online anywhere?
Yeah, it should be.
Send it to me. I'll put it on the website.
I did one with Colin Quinn and Slam not that long ago.
You write articles for Slam magazine?
Yeah.
Oh,
I did one with Colin Quinn, and I did one with Charlemagne the God.
I love Charlemagne.
I do.
Never
I do
heard
love
of him. He's huge here.
You've never heard of him?
Mm-mm.
Rick Tellender.
Rick Tellender.
What do you mean you never heard of Charlemagne?
He doesn't play the music that I listen to.
Oh, you're not a hip-hop guy.
Yeah, and then it's like I was in L.A. and Maryland. He's just not. He's a DJ in New York.
He's become a really big personality, especially with social media, and he's on MTV. So
yeah, him and Schulz are like huge with their thing.
The Brilliant Idiots, yeah.
Name, yeah.
I did a workshop for his show that's coming out and on MTV.
Yeah, they asked me to do that. And
on Common
Sense? I don't think so,
you're not
going to
do
guys.
It? You should.
A workshop for a thing I can't even do
workshop.
Anyway.
Oh, a workshop. Oh, you mean, but did they ask you to do the show? I'm
they
sure they would.
Do a workshop.
And well, if you have an opportunity to do the show, I mean, here's the thing that's cool about him is even though he's not a comedian, he is super brilliant, though, at just saying funny things concisely.
Like
and he's just like, Charlemagne, I was kind of blown away in the workshop. I'm like, this guy is a really professional talker, obviously. Like, he's just really good.
Huh.
And I think he's so smart for not doing stand-up comedy because, you know, then everyone's going to say, oh, that wasn't funny.
You're not as good. Right. If you put yourself on that platform, then you're just a bad stand-up.
Because people say to him all the time, you should do stand-up. He goes, no, I know my lane. And I think that's really commendable.
That is
because
commendable.
He could make a lot of money just going around.
Yeah, like
he could sell out Caroline's right now.
A lot of like non-comics have been like, I'll just do comedy to make extra money.
Yes.
Once they become stars. And then you're like, ugh, you're just taking up weeks from us. It's okay if you really, really want to do it. Like, Steve-O seems to, like, still be in it.
Yeah.
But a lot of those guys, like, you would think Steve-O would do it for, like, a year, tour, and then stop.
Right.
But it's like, if you're really willing to commit to it, I'm okay with it. But otherwise, like, you're just taking up a week.
I have a great, you remember Ed Lover?
Uh-huh.
Now, you know he does comedy.
Overweight Lover, Mr. Heavy D?
Like, he's done stand-up.
Ed Lover and...
Yeah, Ed Lover from, Hot 97?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I have a, can I tell you this story? This is a really good story. A black show.
Absolutely.
I get booked for a black show in Brooklyn, whatever. I've done a lot of black rooms. It's a $75 spot. It's an outside show in October. It's warm out. It's in like an airplane hangar.
Okay.
It's actually packed. There's a barbecue going on. It's like 200 people there. It's packed. I get there, say what's up to the guy who booked me, who's also a comedian. He goes, oh, man, we're booked. I got you next time. I go, what do you mean? Like, so he goes, yeah, I know. I don't know what he said. But basically told me my spot was gone.
Uh-huh.
But I'm booked for the show. Right? But he goes, but, you know, I can still put you up if you want to go up. You know, it's just not paid. He's like, matter of fact, he's like, I got a spot in Long Island after this if you want to get paid there.
Oh.
Right? Now, this is, by the way, the spot in Long Island's like 40
Urban
minutes
Booker,
away.
Like, come
I'm
on,
in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Right? So me, though, being the thirsty comic I am, this is 2 years ago, I go, no, I guess I'll still do the stage time. Right?
Yeah. Oh, so like, hey, the money, we're not making it, but you can still work.
You can
like,
still work.
Because it's not work.
So, but get this. So not only does he not, right, he bumps me, right, at the show. He puts me on, he says, I'm going to put you on the pre-show. So not even the actual show, right? So there's people sitting a lot, but there's also people still moving around. The pre-host goes on stage.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, so you're going to go up during while people are walking around. So now I'm like, now I'm angry. Now I'm pretty fuming.
It's not even a good room anymore.
I'm pretty pissed.
Yeah.
So, but there is still a lot of people sitting down. The host brings me up, says some name. I don't know who that is, so I don't know who he's talking about. Then he goes, oh, who? Oh, all right. No, Joe Vesey. This is not right. It's just the word, right?
Jesus Christ.
So at this point, I'm just angrier and angrier. Now, when I'm angry, like to this level, I'm actually sharper in a weird way. So, oh, and side note. So Ed Lover, before I get on stage, walks up. He wasn't on the flyer. I see this dude give him some cash. So I'm thinking like, oh, so did Ed Lover, he wasn't on the flyer. Did he get put on last second? So now he's coming in. So I guess what, did I get bumped for him? I don't know. Long story short, I'm walking up to the stage. So I don't remember how it started, But there's enough people sitting. Keep that in mind. So I went up and I said something about knocking the host, right? He doesn't write a name. I start dissing that. Why this is a bad room, because it's a black show. I'm dissing the barbecue. I'm dissing the DJ. All of a sudden, the crowd is really coming up because they can't believe, because I'm not only dissing it, there's a hostility to it that's clear. Yeah,
the real anger.
Yeah, real anger. So the crowd, especially black rooms, you know, they get very like, wow, this white guy's really fucking lacing into
us. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you have any sort of balls as a white guy, let's
get
in the room too.
I'm dissing just anything I see, I'm dissing. So, I can't remember these jokes. I actually have a tape somewhere, but I don't remember what I was saying. Christy Stefano was there, matter of fact, on the sidelines. He was booked on the show. Of course, he didn't get bumped. And I remember seeing his face looking at me with this look of like bewilderment and smiling, like, wow, this guy's really. And then I remember seeing Ed Lover, and this is the only thing I can remember that I said about. I said, "Oh, and Ed Lover's here." It was fucking 1998, and I was like, "Well, you guys couldn't pay enough to get Charlemagne, like get someone like who's relevant." So I was, so I just went in on the. So then I get off the stage. I did good, and the host came up to me, who pushed me, the other guy, the promoter who bumped me.
You, yeah.
He was like, man, you can't really be, making fun of the room. Like, he's telling me something, and then he goes, man, I probably should put you on a later too, because you were like kind of a little couple too many cursing. Like, he's actually putting me in the worst spot of the show, but he's actually telling me like I made it harder for everyone else to follow this.
Oh yeah,
like I made it tough. And then Chris had told me that he said Ed Lover and his crew were right there. Like, he didn't talk to me or whatever, obviously. I was kind of... He was with some goons, too. Like, it kind of was a little...
They probably had to decide, should we fuck him up? And Ed Lover's like, nah.
I was a little, worried, but I heard that when I was on the sidelines, he was listening, and he was like, what did he say? And then the guy repeated to him, and he went, man, I'm a fucking legend. And then, when I'm leaving the show, because I wanted to get out of there as soon as possible, I heard Ed Lover get announced, and when he went up... I guess he didn't like the applause he got, because he went, yo, he goes, yo, y'all ain't going to clap for me like I did this. And he lists everything he did in his career. He's like I wasn't this of Hot 97. Like, I wasn't on Biggie's out. Like, he went through everything.
Really?
And he said, y'all don't clap for me again like this. I'm going to fucking piss on this fucking. Like, he just went in. And I thought that was just so funny.
And, I love when people need respect.
Yeah, he was like really pissed. And then... I don't know. Then I heard him doing some, masturbation jokes, and I was out of there. But that was a great black show. I don't think I've told that story ever, so I just reminded me of it for some reason.
I love people get mad at you for doing something. Like, that guy couldn't follow that. I'm like, I don't – so what do you want? Talk to him. Tell him to be funnier. Don't talk to me and tell me not to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird. Like, when I've opened up for comics that have been doing it for 20 years, and they're like, oh, don't do this. I sometimes get it. Like, I understand it, but at the same time – it's like, but you've been doing this for 20 years, and you're going to strip me of...
Yeah, my thing is, even if it's really... If, you come out and, throw out, 10 N-bombs, and do all crowd work and shitty, and then it's, make half the crowd leave...
Well, that's a little extreme.
I'll still be like, it's his stage time. I mean, don't book him again, but,
Yeah.
It's his stage time. He can do whatever he wants with it. Well, I'll just have to work harder now.
Well, there was just a comic that was headline, and I was... It was like a... when it's not... There's no opener, so you're the host and the opener.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
and they
were
like, no crowd work. And I was just like...
What do you mean no crowd work? You got to get the show started. That no crowd work is bullshit. Like, it gets the crowd all riled up. Like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, she was like, well, I work them. I do. I work the crowd. And I'm like, well, fuck. And it just... because now I'm coming out like a robot. It's like, okay.
If you say none of this because it'll stop me from doing it, then it's like, then you're not original enough.
Yeah, it's...
If you're like Rick Ingram is this comic in L.A. who does a lot of crowd work, and he's great at it. He doesn't give a fuck if you do crowd work in front of him. He's like, I'll still do 15 minutes, and I'll connect with the crowd, and it won't matter.
Because any legit comic I've worked with,
don't
give
talk about politics
because
I do, or don't talk about dirty because I do that. It's like, fuck you.
No, that's why any guy
I don't even mind it. My dirtiness is going to be more witty than a fucking open micer's dirtiness.
See, there you go. That's the thing. Like, anytime I've opened up for Donnell Rawlings or Godfrey, they have always talked about that. Like, I don't give a fuck what you do because I'm going to do my shit. And I'm going to blow you out the water. I mean, they don't say that, but they basically have. And I get it.
Most real comics don't. Morgan Murphy told me some story once about being at Tempe Improv, and this awful cokehead Dan Murrow, who's thankfully dead now, said that the headliner didn't want to do dirty material. Bill Burr didn't want to do any dirty material.
Right.
And she was like, okay. And she did the whole week, and then at the end of the week, on a late charity show, she goes, so I didn't do any dirty jokes. And he's like, what? She's like, yeah, I kept it pretty clean. He goes, I don't care. What are you talking about? I'm
so
dirty.
Who told her not to do
it's
it?
Just Dan Murr, the fucking cokehead owner.
Wow.
In his name said, don't be dirty, because he's such a fucking liar. Or he'll say the law says you can't have a drink on stage. I'm like, that ain't the law, you motherfucker. You just don't want to let people drink on stage.
Yeah, that's it's just it's a shame to strip, like, especially someone who hasn't been doing
let
it
him
long.
Develop. Let him figure out, oh, this dirty stuff isn't getting the right laughs. I don't want to do this anymore. You have to develop on your own. You can't do it from outside sources.
And you're someone who's very outspoken, right? You don't really give a fuck too much
free
about
free speech.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean the law can't tell you. It means no one should tell you what to not say. You should just say, I didn't find that funny. But not right. You're not allowed to say that. I don't want you doing this material in front of me. That's all censorship.
Yeah.
No.
But you're very ballsy because you will, like, name names, right, when you kind of talk about stuff.
I'll name everybody.
Right.
I just speak normally.
Yeah. No, I know.
As long as it doesn't cause, like, physical or monetary damage to someone, then it's like, it ain't me to protect you. I don't got secrets. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't feel like anyone else should, I guess. I don't respect their secrets. But, yeah, sure.
No, I understand. No, because people always worry, like, oh, well, if I say something about this person, how are they going to feel? And maybe they won't put me on this. And
I know,
blah,
but
blah,
it's
blah.
Like, that's on you. I'm here for the art. I'm here for the art.
Yeah, that's a good way to be.
You make decisions about your stand-up, like, this is what I want it to be. If you want to be dirty, then go be dirty, because that's your art. And if you're like, well, it's going to hurt me because this person doesn't like dirty, it's like, that's on them. You can't win fans from everybody.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. But it's like, I like to use names. I like to use specifics.
Well, I mean, I just saying, but I've noticed that about you in general anyway. That's a cool way to be. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm
doing a joke now about Luis Gomez and me telling him to have an abortion for his kid. But I say his name because it's just, that's more like specific and like genuine than just say,
right,
a friend of mine.
You guys know each other. It's not like a...
Yeah. But I mean, if I do shit about Hertz rental car being shitty, I'm not going to do the joke about like it rhymes with Mertz. I'm just going to be like, Hertz rental car, they fucking suck. They did this and this.
Right.
You know?
Right, exactly.
I'm not worried about protecting them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Especially if it's something they did shitty.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like, oh, he fucking had sex with somebody. It turned out that was a dude. Where it's like, all right, that's on you to say. You know?
Right.
Or like you cheated on your wife. That's like, that's going to get you in like legit trouble. I'm not going to do that.
Right, right.
But like once you broke up with a wife, yeah. I'm
no,
not going like, to protect you.
No, because I'm very like, the stuff I talk about on stage is all stuff that usually is going on in my life.
Yeah, and exactly. And so you make it real. Well, so the way you say, like I refer to you as Vessi, okay? Not Joe Vessi. So if I talked about you in a bit, I would say, and this guy Vessi told me to come do, you know, whatever. But if it's talking about Renazisi, I'd say Renazisi. Steve Simone, I say his full name. I want to say it the way I would normally in conversation.
Yeah, it's better. It just sounds better.
Or if it's somebody nobody's heard of, it's like some comic from Long Island.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter. Because that's how I normally say it to my friends. I want to keep that genuineness.
Do you talk about a lot of personal stuff on stage? It's all of it?
I mean, it's just no lies. So some of it's personal. Some of it's my feelings on things. Some of it's I guess it's all... Everything's personal. Unless it's like political shit.
Right, okay.
But even that's like it's personal, like your feelings about it.
Yeah, no, it's true.
You know?
No, I'm like, just wondering how personal you get. Like for me, it's like literally what's going on. I can't exaggerate it other than to make the joke.
Yeah.
Like everything, you know what I mean? And here's the thing, I sometimes get caught up in it, but then I realize, wait, only people that really understand of who this is are the 15 people that are around and know the scene. I said the general population has no idea what the fuck I'm talking about.
Here's my theory, that they pick up on the fact, like if I'm doing a bit about this conversation right now, okay, it's way cooler to say, me and Joe Vessi were at the White Project. What's this place called?
Stuytown
Courts.
Yeah.
It's better than saying, me and this guy were at a basketball court. You know, it's just people can see it better.
Yeah.
But like...
And the names help. It's just
absolutely.
It helps. The detail.
But if I change the name to me and Dave Smith were at the basketball, to them, they won't know the difference. But there's still something like in my delivery won't be quite as genuine as if I'm picturing and thinking about you and your face.
Like,
I say Joe Vessi. I can change. I used to have a bit about this, me and Tate Fletcher going to a strip club. And I could change it because he's like, hey, don't tell people. But then it's like, it just won't be quite as real.
I know.
The audience won't know what they're missing, but they'll be missing something.
You're right.
That's my artistic.
That's
feelings.
How I feel when
so for
I
my art. Fuck it, I'm not changing for anybody.
Yeah, like sometimes I've had worried about, oh, should I not tell this story because it'll come back to the person that I'm telling the story on the stage? But I'm like, fuck, this is the business I got into. I got to talk about it. It's too good not to talk about.
Yeah, a lot of LA comics on podcasts, they won't say shit about somebody who's like a director or one of their movies or an actor because they're like, well, I might work with them. It's like, dude, fucking speak your mind. You also might not work with them.
I know.
And if you don't like something, just say you didn't like it and why. Don't worry about your friend.
It's so tricky. It's scary, I guess. People are so worried about getting blackballed or getting like fucking...
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to go out of your way to be mean to somebody, but at the same time, it's like, if you're writing a bit about it, write a bit about it.
Yeah, there's nothing
you can... Go for it if you're going to go for it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's how I feel. Some people disagree, but...
No, I think it's a very freeing way to be.
It's
as long
so
as you're
freeing.
Comfortable
it's
with
so
it.
It's so freeing.
Unless you're, as long as you're comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And
any sort of like backlash that comes is also...
You like that too?
No. Well, sometimes I like it because they're just still talking about you. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But like any backlash that comes is comes from the same place as the opposite of backlash, as the praise you would get for doing something that's edgy that people like.
Well, here's the thing.
So like three out of four things might hit hard and one thing might get you in trouble. People are like, it wasn't worth it. I'm like, yes, it was, because I got those three other things that everybody liked from the same attitude.
Right. Well, a sketch I did, like I put out sketch stuff on like YouTube, and the more personal my sketches have been, just
the better reaction.
Yeah, of course.
People
just
like honesty.
The reception is just like ridiculous. It's so amazing. The way, and they're like, oh, this is so real. And I'm like, well, this was my life. So it was, it's just really cool to see.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how can I go away from this if
truth,
this is what
man.
Gets the reaction?
Just keep saying truth.
I know.
Even if it's like, you know, I take three showers a day
like,
in New York in August. It's like, that's just a real thing. If it's just a user reference. But if I say, like, I take three showers a day in L.A., it just doesn't ring as true. It's just not as humid there.
I guess I sometimes develop such a weird conscience where I'm like, oh, but I'm putting this person on blast, and then their friends know, and then I'm like, but...
My thing is, you maybe go warn the person, be a man, that I've not always done that, and been like, I should have, like, warned them, like, just so you know, this thing's going to come
out. My other rule is, though, if you do something fucked up, and you brought in other parties, well, that's just on you. Now you got to just face the consequence. Then I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe you shouldn't have been, you know, doing this thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel about secrets in general.
Yeah.
My feeling on secrets is, it's up to me to change shit. So if I do something, like if I shoplift, let's say, and I'm embarrassed about it.
But
if I'm embarrassed about it and I don't want to hide it, I want to hide it because like, I don't want anybody to know, then it's like, well, then I should stop shoplifting because I can stop. But if I feel like that's okay, I'm poor, and there's a way to get free shit, then just talk about it.
Yeah.
You know? I know a lot of girls that are, like, super slutty that just, like, are open about it, and nobody makes fun of them because they're like, well, where'd you find out she fucked three guys? Like, oh, from her? How am I going to mock her?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So either change the behavior or be fucking open and free. Free yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like you're a bedwetter and you want to change it, but you can't. Like,
right.
Those things are different.
Yeah, no, the more you talk about your insecurities, the less you feel
doesn't
like someone's going to attack you for
them. I did a podcast with Joe List talking about herpes, and he was like, you know, at first it's like a stigma, and then it becomes like, it's just something I have. Who cares? What time does this game start?
3 o'clock.
What time is it now?
2:45.
You want to walk over there and keep talking?
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Can you do that?
Uh-huh.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome.
That's pretty dope. That's really funny. I wish someone had a camera of us walking with these two mics.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me put this shit in here.
That's really fucking funny. I just have to stop by my car to get my shoes. It's right on 18th Street.
Here's what I noticed.
It's the whole journey.
Tell me a bit this about street ball.
Yeah.
It is a bunch of guys who have... Here, take the long one.
Okay.
In case you got to walk away.
Okay.
A bunch of guys who wear flip-flops to and from the court. When did the flip-flop become part of the gear?
Like the way I'm in?
I see anyone who's wearing flip-flops to a court, I'm like, that guy can probably play.
That's a good assessment.
Yeah.
It's not going to be too... That's so funny. A guy walking...
Like, you don't want to ruin your shoes or something?
No, you might... Okay, here's where it started. So people don't know, I'm in Jordan slippers now.
Oh, Jordan slippers, yeah.
Yes, I'm in Jordan slippers with socks. No, the reason it started because... Okay, so as a basketball player, especially the amount of basketball I'm playing...
Yeah.
And mostly gyms...
Yeah.
One, you don't walk outside with your gym shoes because it messes up the bottoms, the traction.
Oh, right.
And it dirties them. So the one is you go to the court or the gym in a different pair of shoes, number one. So two, slippers are easy to go in and out of.
Right. Absolutely.
And also when you're in shoes all the time, it's like relaxing and it helps you on your feet. Yeah, what's up, man? No, we're just recording a podcast. Yes, we were shooting that day. We were shooting the sketch.
These are microphones.
It's a podcast.
I got them from the store.
How do you take them out?
Wow, this kid's very forward at just taking your shit.
How do you talk?
Everything's going good. Remember, I was playing ball on the other court. I was shooting, too. The sketch is good, yeah. We put it out on YouTube. It was fun. I appreciate that day letting us do that. That was nice. Yeah, we shot a bit of a sketch in like when it was a tent over that basketball court, and we were shooting it.
Oh, nice.
Check it out on YouTube. It was called The Protection.
You guys were at the Protection. You guys were at the tent?
We were at the tent, yeah.
And the teenagers were there.
The teenagers.
I
Oh, you were there too?
I was there, yeah.
Oh, he was there. Wow, you guys have good memory.
He was there. I was not there.
Ari Shaffir was not there. He's probably filming a Comedy Central special. And I was doing a YouTube sketch, so let's keep shit in perspective. Yeah, check it out, man.
I'll see you later, kid.
This is the guerrilla style of your podcast. How great. You never know what's going to happen.
I love it. Jay Fodd and I were doing one together.
I got recognized before you. I feel really bad. That was crazy.
The comedian dude, I was like, oh, you're not pointing at me. You're not pointing at me. That's nice. I like that. Fucking Joe Vesey coming up.
Trying to come up, man.
Dude, this is so nice out here.
Yeah, we kind of should have done it over here, right?
Oh, on this big lawn, we could have stared at hot chicks.
By the water fountain.
Out.
This is a great idea for a podcast, do it really like on location type shit.
Yeah, I do it. Me this and is beautiful. Morrissey did one from a Yankee game.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, I did one with Joe at Central Park. I like moving around with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would have done it earlier if I'd known you were, and it feels better. The conversation is changing because...
Yeah, so, you come across stuff, yeah.
But oh,
yeah.
So the slippers, though, it feels better on your feet when you're in sneakers for 10 hours a day.
Sure.
So you feel it's better on your feet. That's really sure. Where it comes from.
Yeah. I feel like that's how, like, when Broadway stars.
Actually.
What?
We're going to go this way. Sorry.
When Broadway stars, like, get into a robe as soon as they're done with,
You
know, their performance. They're not staying in costume, even though your costume is jeans and a T-shirt.
Right.
They just get out of it.
It's a similar thing. Yeah, and when you're a ball player, you're always in basketball clothes. I mean, when I first started comedy, which I don't think I met you, I was doing comedy in velour warm-up suits. And Godfrey and Bobby Collins, a lot of these comics were like, what the fuck are you doing? They're like, unless that's your act, you're just up Bobby there in a Collins. Velour suit talking normal. So why are you in, you're not even addressing it. I wasn't even addressing it.
I think that's almost better than someone who's like, I'm the guy in the track suit. I do this.
You know what's funny? Looking back on it, I said, but you can't deny it would have made me stick the fuck out.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
There's something to, there was funny, my friends would be like, yo, I know they're telling you not to do comedy, but they're like, yeah, that's your, yeah, they didn't like understand like it was me.
Yeah,
but
like Jay goes up in a garbage outfit, but it's like he's not doing jokes about it, so it's fine. It's just like, oh, you don't have style.
I guess people were like
velour jumpsuits. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I guess I really early on kind of got affected by it. Now I realize since that was like. I guess I wasn't in on the joke, so then I started to feel kind of insecure about it, so I changed my
You
looks.
Were the joke.
Yeah, I was the joke. Yeah, so, I mean, there were times, like, people were looking at me like, I didn't know even at the time, like, what the fuck? Why is this guy in this, like, Nelly warm-up suit and a Nietzsche velour warm-up suit? Like, it's even funny, like, even...
They should bring back tearaway pants. I used to love those in high school basketball. Just those fucking, yeah, I'll go in and just rip them off.
People that I became cool with eventually, hearing them talk about how they used to look at me is really funny.
Really?
Just because they were just like, what the fuck? They didn't understand. Cool. What were you doing?
I went through a fedora period in L.A.
Oh, you had that fedora hat? Oh, that's
I had like three
funny.
Or four, but I couldn't really afford good ones. So it was just like whatever, like $12 one I could find that sort of fit me.
Were people making fun of you?
Behind my back mostly, but some to my face. It spilled over.
It spilled over. Yeah. It was such the making fun of got so high that it just kind of came to your face.
There was this girl in Michigan who they started calling cocksucker behind her back because she just wanted to fuck everyone on the football team.
Okay.
And then eventually people just said, hey, what's up, cocksucker? They just started calling her cocksucker, and it was like fine. It was like that was just her nickname.
That's how much you suck cock that
she
becomes fine.
There was no like
it was, yeah,
disrespect.
Like,
it was just like she liked doing it. She was open about it.
She was open about it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's like, that's my thing.
I have a theory, though, and I don't even know if it's a theory. As much of it, I think it's just a fact, that there's not really that many girls that are really promiscuous that have no other issues and that are just normal people. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah.
I'm not saying
I'm
you can't.
You.
Like, if a girl's like really promiscuous, they're like, well, I'm totally fine. I guarantee you get in a relationship with that girl. She's got some real issues.
Some real, not like the issues everybody has.
Not issues that everyone else. Like some real, whether it's daddy issues, whether it's
I never liked the
attention.
Idea of daddy
I need,
issues.
You know, I need attention every second. I'm doing it for validation. Whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You got something. Don't tell me you're just out there having sex with a lot of people just because you enjoy the art of sex.
You think it's the same with dudes?
I think
like Mark Norman types who are like, you know, fuck so much. Like
I didn't know that. Is that a thing? Is that
five,
a thing
six different people a week.
Really?
And just like very few repeats.
And he's also that good at getting five or six.
Yeah,
a week.
It's amazing. He just can do it. And he doesn't really want to repeat, but it's like, there's got to be some issues there too.
Yeah, I would say to that extreme, I would say. So I'd say dudes are a little less because biologically we're a little bit.
Sow our seeds.
We want to spread our seeds.
And also there's no societal like going like, nobody's going to look down on him for that, or very few people. So he's not overcoming the looking down on.
But I would say he's a little extreme.
Yeah, he's definitely extreme.
I would say so. I say there probably is some issues with him because that's to that level of
yeah.
And to be honest with you, I'm very different from that. So even you telling me that, I kind of look at him like a little bit like, whoa,
damn,
like, do you have an issue?
I mean, I get it right when he broke up with his girlfriend.
Five,
or
six
like,
a week.
But then it's like, it's been six, 8 months.
Yeah, that's a lot. Here we walking across here. 5 or 6 a week, goddamn. That's a lot. I mean, just the fact that he can bag 5, 6 a week is also fucking
crazy.
Impressive.
But I mean, when you're with him and hanging out.
I would love to see his game.
I want to like be a fly on the wall.
What is that? How does that work?
I think he's got a couple like moves. Like, I hate when cab drivers fucking stop for you.
Can we state that? I know how to hail a taxi.
And
I
it's like you're trying to cross the street and they slow down. It's like fucking move, man!
Cross the goddamn
street.
I'm like, I know how to go like this. I would do it. What's up, man? I think he's stopping for a different reason.
Oh, he wants this guy's
stopping
to
for a different reason, but
or they honk. They do the little half honk.
Yeah, the half honk.
And like, you're annoying me. I was lost in thought. You ever see any NBA players just get torn up on one of those street ball courts? One of those like Rucker Parks, just like abused?
Yeah, I have. That game, I mean, I do remember he's my dude too. He's my guy, but he did get killed. He at the Rucker Park EBC, my game, after that game, Jamal Tinsley.
Yeah.
Who's my boy? We're very close with Jamal Tinsley. Good guy. He played against Bone Collector. And Bone Collector, who's one of the best street ball players of all time, he shook him up a couple times and did some moves on him. He really had some highlights on him that day.
He's like, fuck.
But Jamal, though, here's the thing. Bone Collector, he could not play in that structured environment in the NBA. Jamal Tinsley could. So Jamal kind of also took it easy out there. It wasn't like Jamal was going all out.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's what they said. Because I played with guys at Maryland from the team, and like they're not that good. And people are like, they're not trying.
Yeah,
it's just
happens.
A pickup game.
I'm trying to think of guys, though, who have gotten I've beaten an NBA player one-on-one before.
Who?
Gennaro Pargo.
Oh, wow.
Do you know Gennaro Pargo?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I didn't know he was in the NBA till after the game.
Wow. That's cool. You think that helped you play better?
I think so. If I didn't know. What are my shoes?
Damn, you got a bag full of socks in here.
I know. Well,
and Bounty.
Yeah, this is my...
You living out of your car?
No, I just came from the Hamptons, so I came. Let me get a little bit of this.
All right, well, let's call it. We can put your shoes on.
Put the shoes on?
Yeah,
are we ending the podcast thing? Or pause it?
Let's pause it.
Again?
We're on now. This one cord I got because so I could like actually go to my fridge when I'm doing it, get a drink, and come back.
Is this recording? This is a great thing.
Yeah.
Wait, but so I left off, though, telling you I beat Gennaro Pargo one-on-one. The way I did this was, though, I got to tell you, I'm in Las Vegas at the Summer League because it moved from Boston. This is now years later.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I'm in Vegas playing in a gym below the Summer League basketball. There's like another gym, empty.
Okay.
And I'm playing ball by myself. And these four guys come in like T-shirts and shorts. And one dude says, yo, can I shoot around with you? And I said, yeah, sure. And he shoots around with me, and, you know, he's good. And I asked him, I said, are you guys in town for AAU or something, you know?
Yeah.
You know what AAU is, right?
That's weird.
It's like traveling.
Division
like, three. Yeah. No, it's like it's like high school, like high-level high school traveling basketball team in the summer and throughout the year. So I was like, you guys in town for AAU? And he's like, nah, whatever. And then, and then lo and behold, the guy I asked that question to was Joe Johnson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The Hawks?
Yeah. And he was like, he was with the Suns, I think, at that time. And I just didn't see him in person. I don't know if I didn't know what he looked like or whatever.
Out of context, too. You're like, what would they be doing here? Some guy from
I don't know why he was there because he needed the Vegas Summer League. He just signed $100 million. He just signed a $100 million contract.
Yeah.
So then. Joe Johnson goes and plays someone else one-on-one, and then Gennaro Pargo, who I didn't know was in the NBA, if I didn't know who Joe Johnson was, I damn sure didn't know him, said, do you want to play one-on-one? We did. I beat him once. I think he beat me once. And then finally, in conversation, it came out, hey, I played for the Bulls.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I kind of felt embarrassed when he told me he played for the Bulls.
Because
I beat him. Because he was playing. Because I didn't know. He knew I didn't know who he was. And he was good. The games were close.
Was he playing to win for real?
There was nothing about him when we were playing one-on-one that I thought this guy's taking it easy.
Pulling it up, yeah.
Because why would I even think he was? Or,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. He'd be like, yeah, we play to win, right?
Yeah, like, why wouldn't we be playing?
Are there any fights out there?
fights where?
On like the Rucker Park or the or even the EBT or the or the
EBT
or,
EBC
EBC or and one courts.
Yeah, there were fights here and there. Not yeah. like that many, but I guess I mean I'm sure, especially in tournaments there were. Not so much at the N1. There was stuff that went on behind the scenes with guys, N1 coach, you know, shit yeah. like that. I remember the N1 coach yelled at one of the guys and said one of the best phrases I've ever heard in my life. He said, "Shit in my ass, motherfucker." That's what he kept saying. Said, "Shit in my ass, motherfucker. Word, word. Shit in my ass."
What does He's that like, mean?
I don't know what that means either. I mean, it's one of the greatest, you know, put together sentences I've ever heard in my life. Well, my bad, my dick. I told you the same shit yesterday. You didn't listen. That's why you didn't fucking play. Shit in my ass. I have one of the best verbal. Here we're crossing. I have one of the best verbal altercations between the N1 coach and one of the players on video that no one else has, and it's one of the funniest fucking things
really?
Ever. It's one of the greatest verbal altercations. That's where he says shit in my ass.
Really? You yeah, have that on video?
I have it on video.
Let me
yeah,
have
I
it.
Should I should fucking show it to you. It's so fucking hilarious. I actually misplaced it. I know I have it in my house, but I was looking for it the other day. When I find it,
yeah.
we should fucking like... We should put it on. Like
yeah.
I've never put it anywhere.
Yeah,
but
look for it. I'll put it at the end of this podcast.
It's something. So funny because they're fighting, and I remember the dude goes. I remember the player goes. Is that a threat? And he goes. Is that a threat, Steve? Because that was the name of the coach.
Is shit in my ass a threat?
No, no. Like he was just at one point. He just goes, "Is that a threat?" And he goes, "You know." The coach was like, "Word. That's word to my mother. You gonna film it?" And the dude kept going, "That's a threat." And he goes, and the coach just went, "Fuck you, man. No, fuck you, man. Just mother, fuck you, man. You're shit in my ass." Like this was the fight. It was incredible. When you're around, I mean, this is just the truth. When you're around, like people. Who are ghetto?
Yeah,
you're gonna hear them put words together that you never knew could go together, and it will stay in your head like a great pop song. I still be in my shower. I'm soaping up. Shit in my ass, motherfucker. Shit in my ass. I'm still doing that. That's how great that is. I could recite like almost that whole altercation at one point. How it starts, how it ends. My bad, my dick. That's a good one.
My bad, my dick.
It was my bad.
Did you
my
ever start
dick.
Talking black more? When you were hanging around with everybody?
Yeah, I'm sure I did. Yeah. I was never as affected as some people.
Some people get so
some
bad.
Some people get so bad. Here, no one's here yet. Can we just pull off on this bench right here?
Yeah.
Some people are really bad.
Yeah.
And that's not Sam, is it?
I don't know. Maybe it is Sam. Yeah,
is
it
that
is
Sam?
Sam. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I didn't know that was you. I was like, who's this guy like in a
on,
fucking...
Sam.
Yeah, that's like... The weirdest fucking outfit for like basketball.
That, like that top shirt should be a polo shirt. Yeah. Okay.
You look like you're ready for like we're gonna play in Central Park, like play baseball or some shit.
Your punctuality's good. Your punctuality,
wait, aren't
so.
We here on the
yeah,
time?
We're here on time.
We're here on time.
You're right. You're right.
3:05. We're right here.
Wait, one more question, and then we can go. One, you gotta say where people can find you.
Okay, where people can find me. What's up, man? Am I what? Am I dodging the professor? Look, we're doing it's so
they
funny.
Don't know you.
No, I'm not dodging the professor. The professor could play me. He knows where to find me. Where can people find me? People can find me on Twitter at Joseph Vessey, VECSEY.
VECSEY.
I want my YouTube channels, my name.
Okay. I'll put links to all these on the website.
Yeah, I put out sketches, high quality sketches. I'm one of the few comedians that actually puts out quality sketches on my own.
As opposed to what?
Well, I think a lot of comedians, they don't know how to film stuff. I edit. I do all that
really?
Shit. So I know how to do
great, man.
All my
all
own
experience.
Stuff. And then I got my podcast, The Callback, on iTunes and SoundCloud.
Yeah. Okay. Last question.
Yes.
When did they just stop caring about carrying the ball and double dribbling?
In N1 or
yeah,
in life?
Yeah, in N1.
It's not so much that
they should let LeBron get away with 9 steps all the time, but like, no, I mean, like in those N1 games, you're like, that's an illegal move.
I'm trying to think. I guess because the first couple tapes, you know, guys did some things that were questionable.
Yeah.
And then a guy named Hot Sauce, a.k.a. Philip Champion, that's his real name, came out. This dude from Atlanta came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And just was so creative and started doing, like, these things you'd never seen. You couldn't even really wrap them around your head. Like, what is he even doing?
Yeah.
They were illegal, but they were incredible.
They looked beautiful.
And when you put them on the tape, the N1 tape, it was already soaring. Then it went out the fucking park.
Wow.
And he's really responsible a lot for, I think, it being popular overseas, and because, you know, people had just never seen this type of creativity. And, yeah, some of it was definitely illegal, but I think then it was just so popular, and then everyone started imitating it, that people were like, okay, in this genre of basketball, you can do that. People started to knock it eventually and say, oh, that's illegal, but that's what this was. He's by far one of the best entertainers I've seen in basketball ever.
Yeah.
Hot sauce. Incredible.
That's like when they add the long jump in skate, you know?
Yeah.
That super, super high ramp. But right. Like, this isn't normal. But this is what this is right now.
Yeah, yo, he used to do a move that he'd be dribbling. And how creative this is. He'd be dribbling. And then if you got close to him enough, like when you try to take the ball, he'd flip it up over his head. And then you didn't know it went over your head.
You're like, what? Where it? And then, then he just
Goleman. Gary Goleman.
What's up, Goleman? How are you?
This is how we're I'm doing Ari's podcast. He does it on the move and on the run. Yeah, yeah. These guys are my two guests. Him and Sam. I'll come in a second.
All right.
Hopefully.
Let's call it and play basketball.
We're going to play basketball. How awesome is this? The podcast stops and then we're on to play basketball.
Perfect.
Thank you, Ari. I had a lot of fun, man.
You're welcome. Thanks, man. I appreciate it, Joe. Joseph Essie. Called up the homies and I'm asking y'all, which part are y'all playing basketball? Get me on the court and I'm troubled. Last week, fucked around and got a triple-double. Freaking niggas every way like MJ. I can't believe today was a good day. That's the episode, everybody. Check my website, arithegreat.com, to get a link to Bessie's YouTube page. And, and all the other stuff about him. Podcast link, so forth, and Instagram such with. All right, so it's restaurant week in New York City. If you don't know what restaurant week is, it's a chance for all the restaurants to open up their doors, get new clientele, so they give you a huge amount of food, and then charge you slightly less than they normally charge you, unless you really realize how poor you really are. It still costs too much, you guys. It's $38 for a dinner. $38 plus tax. We're talking $42. Now you're already over $50 with tip. Now you're already $55 in that range. $60. You get a drink. You're at $50, $60. I forgot where we started. The point is, you guys, it was restaurant week, and I was coming back to New York one day after D.C., they had a great time in the Washington, D.C. Improv. What a wonderful, wonderful club. One day before I go to Montreal, where I have solo shows on Tuesday night at 9 and Wednesday night at 9 and Saturday night at 9 at Cafe Cleopatra. Go to hahaha.com for tickets. My own hour. And then I'm also doing This Is Not Happening storyteller shows at Cleopatra at midnight on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. I'm also going to try to go see Chappelle, and I don't even know what else is there. I'll see Kindler's State of the Industry address, see who's doing the keynote address, maybe I'll go to that, see some stand-up, probably see the Nasty Show, looks good this year. Anyway, all right. So, you get this... Okay, so I was looking at the fucking menu for this stuff, found a place, East Village. Right then, my friend from Beijing called me. Okay, at this time, you should know that I was on a heavy Chiba Chew. They have these taffies now. These taffies that I got from Diaz. Oh, this is another installment of Eats Village. I like that name, Eats Village. It'll just sort of be known that I'm high for a lot of these. We don't have to say it outright. Eats Village. This next episode takes place not in the East Village at all, but in the West Village. So the place I looked for was out because she called and said nothing until 10. Not waiting until 10. Just took the train back. All I had to eat the whole day was gummy bears and edamame. No, not waiting until 10. No fucking way. So we go to this other place, Yerba Buena Vista, something like that. It's in the West Village, 7th and like 11th, and it was fucking good. So what they do is it's $38 for a three-course menu. You choose. I guess every restaurant's different for restaurant week. I don't know. I got some good shit. They sat us in the corner. She was pretty good. I was with a talker. She's kind of a talker. Plus, she was on sort of slow-release Adderall. So her appetite was down, but her talking was up. You know, which is perfect, actually, because the state I was in, I still got high before I left, too. I smoked something else to couple the edible. But when people like Adderall-y, Coke-y sort of talk to you, it's actually kind of a good mix when you're high because you don't have to pay attention to what they're saying. You just have to not look too far away. You know? Like, they're just happy to talk. So if your mind wanders, as it does on weed, like if you're talking to a sober person, your mind wanders, they can tell, like, hey, what? You're not listening. Or you can't come back into the story. With Coke people, you can just pick them up wherever they are. Hey, buddy, where are you in the train right now? Are you talking about high school? How you deserve the grade you got? Oh, interesting. You're one of the smartest kids? Wow. Wander. Back. The stock market's figured out. Well, then what? Well, yeah. No, that's a good way to handle it. Wander. Fine. It's all right. So people get divorced. That's not a big deal. Yeah, sure. Sure, man. A lot of people get divorced. No, nothing's wrong with you. No, I didn't say anything's wrong with her. Wander. Yeah, it's not bad. So the fucking meal was delicious, but the ended up bill being after tip was like $85. This restaurant week shit. I think it's lunch only. It's supposed to be 25 lunch, 38 dinner. But like, I wonder if what you get with the lunch. I wonder if you get as much. That could be an issue. Anyway, the steak was really good, and the fish tacos. Oh my god, I almost forgot. They might have been the best fish tacos I ever got in my life. They were like a zesty, spicy. Nothing like it was like kick, but it wasn't like it wasn't gonna hurt anybody. But it was like, hey, I'm like, oh, all right. It's like when a goldfish when you put your finger in and it goes to try to bite at your finger, and you're like, what? Shut up, buddy. It was kind of like that. Yeah, those were good. Those really might have been the best fish tacos I ever got. You can replace them on the dollar menu. Not the dollar menu. The $38 menu. The restaurant week. And restaurant weeks is like 2 weeks. By the way, this is not sponsored by Restaurant Week. I just realized it sounds probably a lot like that. All right, you guys. That's been another edition of Eats Village. Number 2. In the series, I'm definitely going to forget. All right, thanks, Joe Vesey, for joining us. I used to be good in basketball. I used to be good. I'm terrible now. I mean, I'm terrible now. I'll just airball, like short shots. I'll get around people. I'll sort of have memories of spinning on people. You know, I have a good bottom drop step on the left side, dropping under towards my right. Catch people off guard. But then I go underneath the basket, go up. I can't even make it from a fucking foot. The move is still there. I'm becoming those old people in my neighborhood that I'm like, why don't you look right when you play basketball? So you'd look bad. Gary Goldman fucking hard elbowed me. He said he was sorry so much afterwards, but that guy's fucking big. He'll just body you up. You got to lean into him. That's the only way you can guard him. You got to lean into him. He's going to push back so hard. He jawed me and nosed me. It hurt for like a few weeks after. He said he was sorry so many times. I started to believe that. He said he didn't do it on purpose. I'm like, yeah, I know. And then he just kept saying it. I'm like, do you sometimes do this on purpose? I wasn't thinking you did. I got to start playing more. But I'm not. I'm going to Scotland. You guys, the Edinburgh shows are starting to shape up. The Montreal shows look sick. The Edinburgh show is going to be a lot of British and UK people that I'm not that familiar with, and some American people. Canadians doing it, one of the shows. It's going to be different every week. So you can go to multiple shows if you want. This is not happening shows. I can't wait for Scotland. I hope the weather's okay. Please let it be okay. Like mid-60s and sunny? Is that enough? I was barely back. All right. You guys, thank you. Vessi, that's the episode, right? Is there anything I'm missing? I don't think so. Use my Amazon link at arithegreat.com. Check arithegreat.com for tours. Scheduling. Yeah, nothing until like late September. Besides Edinburgh. All right. Bye, you guys. Thank you. 228. That's clearly a travel with Joe Vessi, over and out. And this. All right. Figure it out what this is.
Basketball Jones. I got a basketball Jones. Got a basketball Jones. Oh, baby. Ooh. Yes. I'm the victim of a basketball Jones. Ever since I was a little baby, I always be dribbling. In fact, I was the baddest dribbler in the whole neighborhood. Then one day, my mama bought me a basketball, and I love that basketball. I took that basketball with me everywhere I went. That basketball was like a basketball to me. I never put that basketball underneath my pillow. Maybe that's why I can't sleep at night. I need help, ladies and gentlemen. I need someone to stand beside me. I need someone to set a pick for.